ladies and gentlemen, there will be a very brief report about the judges and magistrates' salaries, but unfortunately we can't start with it now. We are still waiting for the quorum, and then we will break and allow that report as soon as we are called. At this stage, we will proceed from where we left yesterday. The Department of Justice giving the fair reports. I remember yesterday the last was the NPA. Thank you.
Thank you, President.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. This morning, I trust that yesterday's process was completed, and now we are going to present what we have in terms of statistics that we have collected since June this year. But I must hasten to add that it is a very difficult area, the issue of statistics, because of the transitional nature of the provisions which we are working with, which is the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act. But we are going to give you what we have, and this is what we have. Anthea is going to do the presentations, but myself and her are going to field the questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you. May I proceed?
Yes.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me now? Okay, this is an overview of the stats that we have as at today's date, the 17th of November 2010. We didn't have any stats in the beginning of the year, or never any stats was accumulated. And then on instruction of the NDPP, we started collecting stats in June 2010. And a direction was issued to all the offices of the DPPs and the chief prosecutors to give all states that they have on all cases, whether they are pending or they are still under investigation, but in the offices of the DPPs, or whether they are closed, because
Chair, sorry,
to have
is it possible to get a copy of this presentation? And usually everybody else gives theirs beforehand.
My apologies for that.
You are saying
thank
you don't have copies today. Lady?
Copies will be made available. Thank you.
Did you introduce yourself?
Sorry?
Did you introduce yourself?
I thought Advocate Majakwini already introduced me, so I didn't want to do double, but apologies for that. My name is Anthea van der Byl. Okay. I'm from the Office of the National Director of Public Prosecution.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. So, then on instruction of the NDPP, we started collecting data on all cases, whether they were already finalized or they are still on the court roll or under investigation. And then this is what we currently have. And as we don't have an electronic database yet, we collected this manually. This is just an overview of the current legal framework that we're using. As everyone knows, we are using the Sexual Offences Act, the old Sexual Offences Act, which deals with the prosecution contraventions, and then the new Criminal Law Amendment Act, the Sexual Offences Act, which deals with human trafficking or sexual offences. And we have the Children's Act. I will proceed, I will go directly to the stage now. Currently we have on the court row 15 cases. Gauteng South, 4. Gauteng North, 2 cases. KwaZulu-Natal, we have 2. Western Cape, we've got 4 cases. Eastern Cape, 2 cases on the row. Free State 1 case. They are per DPP office. So you will see the breakdown of that, the three cases in Gauteng South, which is Johannesburg. It is from Othia, Sinton, Boysens and Linden. Gauteng North, we've got one case that is in Pretoria, the Santos Meter. And then Mpumalanga, we've got one case in Ermelo. KwaZulu-Natal, both is from Durban. In the Western Cape, they are from Belleville, Cape Town, Mitchells Plain and Tableville. And in the Eastern Cape, both are from Port Elizabeth, in one case in Welkom in the Free State. And then when no cases were referred for prosecution, in this regions, Limpopo, Mthatha, Northern Cape and the Northwest, we didn't get any data from there. Cases currently under investigation, there are 7. 4 cases from Johannesburg, from Othia, 2 from Johannesburg and 1 from Cleveland. KwaZulu-Natal, we've got 2 cases, both from Durban and 1 from Bloemfontein, which was referred from Port Elizabeth to Bloemfontein. I'm going to deal with one of these investigations, the one from KwaZulu-Natal, Durban. This case is going to court next year in January on trial. It is already in court. It's going to go on trial next year in January. The girls operated the brothel at a club and they recruited Thai nationals as prostitutes. The travel arrangements were made by the recruiters and when they got in Durban, their passports were taken away and they had to pay off 60,000 rand debt. So they were placed under debt bondage. And the rates that were charged were 200 rand for 30 minutes. And once their debt was paid off, they were now like promoted, moved to another brothel, and then they could continue where they continue working as sex workers, but they could keep from the money that they received, and a portion was given to one of the agents, one of the accused who acted as an agent. They could keep the balance, and if they wished to leave, they could buy back. They had to buy back their passports. Then we are dealing with finalized cases. So far we have data from the Western Cape State versus Amin Andrews. He received a total sentence of 17 years imprisonment for kidnapping, assault, GBH, and indecent assault and rape. And then the State versus Mashungwani, it's a case from Pretoria. He received 5-year suspended sentence, wholly suspended, in terms of Section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act for kidnapping, running a brothel and soliciting girls for carnal intercourse of the Old Sexual Offences Act. Then we have the State versus Vipatawai Chaya from Durban. It was also commercial sex exploitation in terms of the Sexual Offences Act, prostitution. They received a fine and suspended sentence. State versus Sawatkan in others, Durban. That was prostitution in terms of the Sexual Offences Act, Old Sexual Offences Act. They got a fine and suspended sentence for that. The State versus Elof in another is a case from Belcom, where they received also wholly suspended sentences. And they were convicted in terms of contraventions of the Old Sexual Offences Act. The ever conviction, this case is not yet finalized as the sentence is still pending, but the accused was convicted in March this year, 10 March this year. They operated a brothel, they used Thai nationals as prostitutes, and the charges that they were convicted of in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, Sexual Offences Act, the Old Sexual Offences Act, and the Immigration Act. They were convicted of racketeering. The prosecutor in this case had to use racketeering as the current Sexual Offences Act, the new Sexual Offences Act, was not yet promulgated by them. And they were also convicted of the following offences in terms of the Old Sexual Offences Act, procurement of a female to have unlawful carnal intercourse, persons living on earnings of prostitution, keeping and controlling a brothel, facilitating prostitution, and receiving remuneration for commission of an act of indecency. And then they were convicted contraventions of the Immigration Act, and also money laundering, section 4 and 6. Section 4 deals with self-laundering, and section 6 is where another person assisted the offender to hide his, the illegal origin of the proceeds. In this case, one of the victims paid 40,000 baht for a flight ticket during April 2007, and all the victims were kept in debt bondage, whereby they entered into an illegal contract. They had to generate 60,000 rand from prostitution before they could retain any profit for themselves. The rates that were charged were 200 rand for 30 minutes, 250 rand for an hour. The records were kept of the earnings, but it was destroyed periodically on one of the instructions of the accused. They worked on a cash system basis. They kept the takings in a CD holder, but it was cleared also on a daily basis by one of the accused. And in this regard, the asset forfeiture unit already forfeited an amount of 19,700 rand that was found on the premises. So in this case, you can see what happened to the money. The accused, they used the money to pay for their day-to-day living expenses, for rental of the premises, water and electricity. Then the case from the Free State, State versus Elop and Godfrey. In this case, the accused placed several advertisements in the Daily Sun, whereby she offered excellent job opportunities for ladies in an upmarket club in Welkom, and they would have earned 4,000 rand according to this advertisement per week, with accommodation and transport available. The accused in this case is a woman and a daughter. The woman, Elof, paid for the bus tickets for the victims, and they traveled from Johannesburg to Welkom. And when they got in Welkom, all their private belongings were taken away from them, their identity documents, and they had to work as prostitutes. And they had to sign rules and regulations issued out by the accused. The two accused pleaded guilty to the following charges: contravention of Section 71 of the Sexual Offences Act, which deals with trafficking in persons for sexual exploitation. And the other charges that they were convicted of were in terms of the Old Sexual Offences Act, keeping a brothel and procurement in prostitution, also living on the earnings of prostitution. They were also convicted of assault and money laundering. And the accused, it was found that they, in the bank account of the accused, an amount of 43,655 rand, and they charge 150 to 200 rand per hour for sex, and 50 rand to 100 rand for 50 minute oral sex. According to the bank statements of the accused, several amounts, separate amounts of money were deposited, but she could not account for the money. There was no indication as to how it was earned. And this occurred on a weekly basis, and then the court came to the conclusion that it was money earned from prostitution in the service of the accused, as there was no other explanation for it. Thank you.
There you are. Thank you very much. I now open for committee for questions and comments. Honorable Swan, and then after Honorable Jeffrey, Honorable Professor Tabanda.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. We've got another document, Human Trafficking Case Analysis, which indicates a number of other cases. Is that going to be dealt with at a later stage, or this was circulated a while ago, and there's a lot of other detail here. It basically summarizes the cases on the roll, etc. Is that tied up with the presentation you've just given?
Correct, yes. It was done for October 2010. As the state that we had at October 2010. We just received recently also new states, and that was included in the states that we presented today.
Okay.
Just to ask, because I see, for example, just we're trying to understand the extent of the problem in the data. Now, for example, on Investigation 7, State versus Patel, there's an imprisonment there, 5 years imprisonment, of which 3 years suspended. prostitution, 18 cases, 89 victims, adult and minors. Those are significant data that we need to bear in mind when we are considering. We've dealt with anecdotal cases now, and I'm trying to get to the exact data of cases, and I know the police will also give us investigations so that we get an idea of everything. But can I ask, there doesn't seem to be any prosecution of labor-related matters. Are you aware of any, or did you only ask for the cases related to trafficking for sexual purposes? Were there any labor-related, because we know, or we understand anecdotally, that that also exists in terms of Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which does provide for offences. Are you aware of prosecutions in that regard? And then lastly, transiting through our ports of entry, are these the only cases that you're aware of? Are you not aware of any other cases? They might well be investigated, and I'm sure the police can give us an indication of that, where our ports of entry are being used to traffic people. Some of them obviously come up in the cases you mentioned, but we obviously are concerned about that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thanks. Look, I must say I'm quite disappointed with the input, particularly from the NPA. I mean, they're the one body with a special unit, a special section, and they've got funding to deal with trafficking and or to deal with trafficking cases. And we've been given a hodgepodge of information. So Mr. Swart refers to one document. There's another document which I think is slightly different to his, which is dated yesterday. This National Prosecuting Authority, HAMN Trafficking Stats and Case Analysis. Then there's the presentation we get now, which we haven't been given, so it's very difficult to if copies aren't made. And really, Ms. van der Bijl has been in the meetings, so she knows how we work. I don't know how she could have come without it unless it was deliberately so we didn't get a chance to look at it. But I'm still pretty clueless. We've been given some anecdotes, which is fine. I think that's important. But I'm still pretty clueless as to the state of the cases. So just to express disappointment, particularly to the NPA. And then you know, I see we've got the Hawks, and they've got documents, and they also talk about, just glancing through their presentation, I think they use some of the same case study examples. And then we've got Department of Justice stats, and I don't know if they all talk to each other. So I really don't think from government side we've got what we were looking for, which is, can government, that would be NPA, and then the stats from social development, but that's slightly different because it's outside the criminal justice system. But I would have expected the criminal justice system to have been able to have given us some kind of authoritative stats. I can't really talk about the presentation now because I don't have it in front of me, but looking at the document that's dated yesterday, which seems to be basically the case studies, some of which Advocate van der Bijl referred to. But it's all mixed up. I mean, there's CAS numbers from, if you look at the CAS number, some are 06, which would be 2006. There's one here which is 2000. The next one, number 3, is 10. Number 4 is 00 again, which is 2000. Number 5 doesn't have a CAS number, so you've got no idea when the date is. So it's all over the place. Then I'd also, so those are just general comments. Then I'd want to know now, are these all trafficking cases or are they prostitution cases? If you look at the Godfrey case, that looks to me like prostitution rather than trafficking. Was there any evidence that the 6 women involved, 2 whites and 4 African women, were trafficked? Or were they just prostitutes? And what they were convicted for was doesn't even have what they were convicted of. I can't even find that on here. But anyway, what I'm just saying is these stats then from the NPA, are they all trafficking cases or are some of them just prostitution cases? I think that's one. The other point is, as I said, it's impossible to actually work out what's going on. I mean, I think let's get the Hawks presentation and the Department of Justice presentation. I see the officials have come in now late, because they, you know, the but I can't really work out what's happening. Maybe one other point to raise, just it's not so much relevant to the stats. The one thing that is noteworthy from the case studies that we've been given is that the sentences are very low. And maybe there could be some comment from the NPA on that. But Chair, just to re-emphasize, I'm really disappointed in this presentation.
Professor Kamandama.
Thank you, Chair. I've got one question for clarity. I noticed, Chair, that the Thai nationals feature quite highly in these case studies. Now, is there any explanation for this kind of tendency? And my second leg of the question is, what would be the extent of what is called in criminal statistics the dark figure, which means the percentage approximately of those cases that we have not discovered?
All right. Advocate, will you please respond to the questions and concerns that has been raised by members of the committee?
Thank you. I will respond to some of the questions. The rest will be dealt with by Advocate Majukweni. We did ask for to answer the question by Honorable Swartz. We did ask for data on prostitution or sexual exploitation as well as labor or any forms of exploitation. And I actually issued a I draw up a format to which they have to answer, and that is what they come up with. It's mainly for sexual exploitation. I also did draw up a form, I gave them a basic outline of how I want them to answer. I asked for the case numbers, asked for the names of the accused, the numbers, for everything, so that I could fill in the gaps of this. There wasn't supposed to be gaps in this, but this is how I got it back from the prosecutors. I did do follow-ups many a times. I asked them specifically for the data that is missing. But unfortunately, I understand that prosecutors are busy. I don't want to put the blame on them. And this is what I got so far. But we will go back to them and fill in the missing gaps, because I realize there's a lot of missing gaps. And then the cross-border crimes, this is what we have. I don't know whether police have anything more. We've got the one case of the Santos, where the three minors were trafficked from Mozambique via through the borders, and all the Thai nationals were actually not smuggled, because they were issued with passports. As you will notice, that the passports were kept in custody, so that they couldn't get the passports back until they pay an amount. I think the rest of the questions will be dealt with by Advocate Majukweni.
This document, is it correct to say that not all these cases are trafficked victims, trafficking cases? I mean, specifically the Godfrey case. You know, you've got on your, this is now your document with the purple thingy. You've got here gender trafficked, nationality trafficked, and you've got there nationality of the trafficker. So you're assuming from this that everybody is, it's all trafficking. But as I said, with Godfrey, it doesn't look like trafficking to me. So how many of these cases, are all these cases trafficking cases, in which there was some evidence of trafficking as defined by our current act, or was there, or is it just prostitution, sexual exploitation cases? That's the proof. And then Dos Santos, what number is Dos Santos? Because I couldn't find them on this document. That's the Mozambican miners. I'm just interested in that case. And my number 13 is Jude Obinna and eight others, a Nigerian. You see, this is the problem. We're getting different documents. There's not one document. This is dated yesterday. So Advocate Van der Bale's response to Mr. Swart, that, oh no, these figures were compiled by for October, that's not true. This is dated 16 November. But anyway, on this document that we got given yesterday, is it 14? Okay, that's it's 14. Okay, but it just shows the difficulty of they're working from different documents, which shows the level of preparedness or the lack of it.
We'll hand over to Advocate Matthew.
Just on Dos Santos then, but these are women. But I thought you said they were being, and it says here prostitution, I thought you said that they were minors. Oh, you mean minors in terms of underage rather than mine workers? Oh, okay.
Do you want to comment before you hand over to Advocate Machubini?
Yes, please. Thank you. I just want to clarify the issue around the October state. I never indicated that. I said that the state is in the beginning. I also mentioned the state is for November. But the case analysis study that was with Honorable Swartz was done for October. That is that aspect. And then to come to Godfrey and Elof, the Elof case. That is a typical example of in-country trafficking because the victims were recruited. An advertisement was placed in the Daily Sun and they are all from Johannesburg. This advertisement was specifically placed in the Johannesburg area. And then the victims was under the impression that they will work as receptionists or whatever in this nightclub. And when they got to Welcome, all their belongings were taken, their passed, their ID documents were taken away from them, and they were forced into prostitution. So I see the trafficking part there. And then you were asking a question with regards to Dos Santos. Yes, it's three minors who was forced into prostitution. They were kept in a house behind bars, and Dos Santos, who is the lady, Dinah Dos Santos, actually had clients who came to this house and were sexually exploited or actually had sex with the children. Thank you. The rest of the questions are again over to Advocate Mr. Queen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I think, as I indicated at the beginning, that this is a very, very difficult area to get any information. Firstly, because, you know, the system has not been geared to actually you know, give that kind of information. And, you know, hopefully the police will be able to give us more in terms of what they've identified as trafficking. But also there needs to be a relationship. For instance, when you're dealing with completed cases, there is not necessarily a nexus between what you have discovered in the docket as well as the charges that have been put and what ends up in the conviction. Because you may have looked at it and saw that it's a trafficking case, but what the judge finds, or the, you know, the magistrate finds, might be something else, which says prostitution instead of, you know, trafficking. And secondly, we said we wanted to raise awareness. It was really about awareness in prosecutors to actually be on the lookout for these cases, to say whatever you find that has remotely any features of trafficking, record that, come back with it to us. And then we can begin to look at what is it that we're actually finding out there. So this data is not clean in terms of it being trafficking cases, but we're currently just raking the criminal justice system to see whether or not these cases are being prosecuted, are they being uncovered, are they being prosecuted, and what are we getting as sentences, for instance, as convictions. Because the awareness is not only, does not only need to be raised you know, in relation to prosecutors, but also to magistrates and presiding officers, because, you know, the results obviously have to reflect what we have found. So we're hoping that the system, as it grows, will be able to deal with these issues in a much better way. For the prosecution, for instance, we have Rudella Care Centers, of which we have 26 now. Of course, you will notice that, you know, the Rudella Care Centers will deal with cases of violence against women, and children will deal with sexual offenses. So the kind of trafficking that will unravel there is really related to the sexual abuse. So even there, you know, in terms of what we are designing as a system, which is called the Tuduzela Information Management System, we're going to still be limited in terms of getting other forms of trafficking, and we still have to resort to this if we don't, with the police, come up with a system that actually records and tracks these cases as trafficking cases. So what I'm saying is that we can go back and clean the data, and the exercise that follows this this collection of data and analysis is actually going back to the dockets and going back to the records to find out really what is it that we're finding, you know, as a post-examination of those particular cases. But it won't help us, you know, much now to say that we're still going to do that, because that has to be related also to when the bill is going to go and become law. So we need to hasten that process to make sure that it informs the process of the bill as well. In terms of the labor issues, there is a death of prosecution around issues of labor, whether it is child labor as clean as it is, or it is trafficking. So there is just a very, very serious lack of investigations in relation to labor cases or labor issues. And unfortunately, the Department of Labor is very under-resourced in terms of that particular section that deals with the inspection of cases where this could be uncovered. So I think that the system itself needs a lot of strengthening, and it's not just for prosecution. Yes, we speak for prosecution, but I think systemically we really need to reinforce the system so that it's better able to deal with these cases. Thank you, sir.
Honourable.
Chair, thank you. And I do see that there is a labour matter that is referred to here where there was 106 victims, which is, I'm just trying to see on this sheet that is the last annexure. One case, 106 victims, and there were there were convictions there. Can I just ask, there was a suggestion a few days ago to approach the Human Science Research Council to do an investigation and to try to establish data. Now, we understand that there was an investigation done by this Human Science Research Council in conjunction with the NPA, and they brought out a report that has been criticized by us in certain quarters. But what are you doing as the NPA with that report? Is there further work being done to gather more data on that, or what is the nature? I found it very interesting reading, but it does paint quite an alarming figure as to the anecdotally, without giving specific data, and that's maybe why there was criticism relating to the methodology that was followed. And this is, I think, for us, it's a very important issue. That report was circulated to all members together with the article that criticised the report. But what is being done from the NPA side, seeing that you drafted this report in conjunction, is there a further instruction to the Human Science Research Council? Because clearly it comes out there that there's very little data being kept in very many Southern African cases, in SADC regions, about the level of trafficking that is taking place. And that, what does one do? Does one wait until you've got specific data, or do you legislate? And that's the dimension that we faced with. Thank you, Chair.
Response?
I don't know whether I can have a response to you, Honourable Swan. You know, the reason why we actually contracted HSRC to do the work was precisely because we wanted to find that out and assist the committee in its deliberations around the legislation. But unfortunately, the one thing that we didn't get is the quantitative data. And we're hoping that because organizations like your ILO, your IOM were also part of the investigation, and we always get this information from IOM that they've assisted this many victims and whatever, you know, we thought that we'd be able to actually get to victims and be able to get to cases. But unfortunately, it really didn't reveal much, which was a grave disappointment. Well, it was done as part of the donor agreement with the EU, and we haven't got money, of course, to engage further with Asia Safri in this regard, because we need to pay them. But on our own, we have structured the Tuvuzela information management system according to the gaps that we discovered in this particular report, and we go back time and again to look at how do we implement the recommendations that have come. And in the task teams, one of the key deliverables that we have said they must have is data, you know, that they collect every time that they get information around this. They must collect the data, because I think that is where it's getting all lost, that people have got, you know, low awareness of this issue, and it's not really taken that seriously. And unfortunately, you know, at the national office with the police, there is only one person, Uveli Umalala, who actually is the liaison person for us, and we do find that it's a serious problem. We have engaged some of the non-governmental organizations that have claimed that, you know, some cases have been reported. There was one that appeared in front of this committee, but when we followed up, we couldn't get to the cases even with that. But we've engaged with the Salvation Army, which has given us a number of cases that they have referred already to Veli Mulala. But we're following up on them to see whether or not they are going to refer them for prosecution, or not. So it's a question of, you know, not waiting to pass a bill, I think, because as long as there is some semblance of information around the existence of trafficking, we should actually look at it. But it does look like it's a hidden thing, even though people know that it's happening, but it's very, very hidden. And until we are proactive around how we uncover it, we can't wait for it to be reported, because it will never be reported.
I notice that the members still want to ask further questions. I would like to make a suggestion. Now that Hawks is here, shouldn't we listen to them? Maybe Advocate Machogweni and Panet Bale will still remain, and then see whether it will not be better that when these questions are raised, if it relates to the scope of what Hawks are doing, maybe they will be giving the answers instead of Machogweni and Panet Bale saying we ask this information and we get this information from the prosecution and the like. Is that a suggestion from the Chief Justice?
Bear in mind when they present, we want to know, are they talking to each other, the data? To what level is their communication that we need to know of the data with the different departments, so that we know that everyone is on the same page. It's not a question of us not passing the legislation. We need to do that in terms of the Burma protocol, but to how much money we then allocate resources depends on the data.
Okay, can you answer that one? Do you interact? Do you talk to each other? Are you on talking terms?
Talking, yes, we do, but the data itself does not link. So that you will find that the cases that we report on, three of them might be reported on by social development and maybe some by the police, you know. So, I can't say at this stage we have systemically a system that actually communicates through, because that I think is the most important aspect of it.
Let me take Honorable Jeffrey and then Honorable Professor Ndabandaba.
I was going to suggest before we have the police, let's finish the prosecutors, because I would then suggest that there's another document, which is a two-page document from the Department of Justice, which is drawn from their integrated case management system, which they spoke about yesterday. That's December 2007 to September 2010. So that's on the same things as the NPA are talking about. The Hawks would be talking about cases open that did not necessarily go to court. So I agree it's all linked and we need all the inputs. But my concern is that I just don't understand these figures, having got the presentation now. And I think to continue belaboring the point, the HSRC study was in March, came out in March 2010. They say there's a problem of lack of data. You know, it's now November. I don't know why something couldn't have been done. Now, my concern with the what we've been given from the NPA is they've got 15 cases on the roll, okay, and they give the breakdown for the different divisions. So 15 on the roll. Department of Justice, then they give an overview, total number of cases per region. I don't know if that is a breakdown of these 15. I haven't added them up. But the figures don't match. So they say on the page which says 15 on the roll, they say Gauteng South 4 cases. You turn the page and it says Gauteng South 3 cases. So we've lost a case somewhere, unless these are not on the roll or these were finished. Cases under investigation, okay, that would be, I don't know if that means they're on the roll or not, that's 7 cases. And then they go to the anecdotes. Now, Department of Justice say, no, the total number of registered cases for Sexual Offences Act, Section 71.1 and 71.2, in the 3 years, so that must presumably be completed cases and cases still on the roll, is 20. So we've got 15 cases on the roll according to the NPA, but in terms of the integrated case management system, we have a total over 3 years of 20 on the roll and off the roll. I mean completed and still on. Those two don't match together. You can understand there would be a problem of identifying sexual trafficking cases, but it should be easier now, at least dealing with the Sexual Offences Act, Section 71 and 72. So, because of the cases on the roll, those offences should have been committed when that act was in effect. So I think even the Department of Justice and the NPA stats don't talk to each other. And maybe following on from Mr. Swart's point and Advocate Njokweni's thing about you talk, but there's not a sharing. I would have expected when we asked for stats, and did this happen, that there would have been a meeting of Justice, Justice, NPA, SAPS, to look at what they've got and how we could be presented with something. But anyway, it's just I think can they respond to the comments, the problems I've got with what is the data they're giving us? And why does it say 15 on the roll and then it cases seem to get lost? So there's 4 cases for Gauteng South and then suddenly there's 3 cases. Unless the one is completed cases and things. But then it's odd that Gauteng North 2-2, KwaZulu-Natal 2. The rest of the figures seem to match up exactly. So I don't know if they're talking about cases on the roll or completed cases.
Professor Ndabandala first before we respond.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a question, Chair. It's a piece of advice for what it's worth. I think the problem of insufficient data in respect of trafficking can be solved by engaging departments at university like sociology and criminology. This would even be quicker than HSRC, in my experience, and even cheaper. Thanks, Chair.
The response from Advocate Njokweni and or Advocate Van der Bay.
I think there needs to be some alignment around the steps that we've given you. I don't know what. Do you want to respond to the housing issue?
Yeah, there was a misunderstanding. I explained this morning to Jillian. I did receive an email from what's Jillian's surname? Nashbet, yes, sorry. And I forwarded the final states, the ones that was presented today, I forwarded to her, and I was under the impression or under the misunderstanding that she is the person who will be distributing the states today. So I must apologize for that. I will find out the correct procedures next time. So the Department of Justice was sitting with all states, and I, in the meantime, I received some new information, and that is the information that is now contained in the presentation.
And I think the 2015 discrepancy is around perhaps relying on electronic data, and then with us, it was actually manual data that was collected from DPP's offices. Maybe unfortunately some of the cases did really get lost in the communication, but then we'll have to go back and just clean up our processes in terms of that. Okay.
Honourable Jeffrey.
I suppose we should. But I suppose my difficulty is NPA presentation, 15 cases on the roll. These are cases that then exist on the court roll at the moment. They are not completed cases.
Okay. Correct, yes.
All right. So all these cases, the cases that are completed, do not form part of this, these stats on this presentation. Okay.
I dealt with cases that was completed.
Well, you dealt with them anecdotally. You didn't deal with them from a stats point of view.
It is contained, I think, after the investigation.
Finalized cases. No, you've got finalized cases are basically anecdotal. You list, you name them, unless those are the sum total of the...
That is the sum total, it is.
So there's only like finalized cases, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cases finalized.
That's correct, yes.
Sure. Over what period? Anyway, okay, now, I don't know why Ms. Lisbeth works for Parliament. I'm not sure why the NPA have to speak to Parliament to talk to the Department of Justice. I mean, that just sounds completely weird. I mean, maybe the Department can then... I mean, they say they got this from this integrated case management system, but okay, I'm just getting completely confused. But then maybe can you just explain why on your own document you've got 4 cases from Gauteng South, and then on the following page you've got 3 cases, and you've lost a case. What happened to that case? That's on your own documentation. Is it then a typo here that it should be 3 cases?
It is 4 cases on the roll. I think there was just it's just an error.
Okay, the typo I see. You've got Autier, Stanton, Boysons, and Linden. So the typo is actually over here where it says 3, it should be 4.
It should be 4 because it indicates 2 Johannesburg and 1 for Autier and 1 for
Boysons. So 4 cases, but it would be good if there could have been quality control. But
my apologies.
Are we done?
I think we are done, but I'm following your advice, Chair, that we should remain,
yes,
until you know everything is complete, so that you can cross-reference. The members can cross-reference in all of them, and so and examine closely, and examine closely,
and cross the bridge and double cross it.
Maybe before they run away, just with the department, I'm interested in this thing of this. The department figures should be the most accurate, because this is from the integrated case management system. Now, is that system of NPA or just the department? Who runs this integrated case management system?
Currently, I am doing it.
Okay.
It's NPA, yes. It does.
So it's NPA statistics.
That's correct, yes.
Now, how can the department, reading your statistics, come out with 20 completed cases from in the last 3 years, December 2007 to 2010? And you don't have that. And they break them down. They're all in terms of the Sexual Offences Act, Section 71.2 and 71.1. So how can you have that discrepancy when it's your own system? And maybe the department and the NPA could give us an explanation for that.
I think the Department of Justice will be in a better position to answer that. Apologies, I'm not aware of the 20 completed cases.
Honourable Shefa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for being late. I just want to know what this integrated case management system is integrated with, because it doesn't seem to me that there's any integration of anything with anybody. And it's supposed to be implemented 12 years ago. It's still clearly not actually functioning properly. So what is the integration meant to be between who? Because it clearly isn't integration between the Department of Justice and the NPA. So who is it integrated with?
That is correct. It is not an integrated system. The states, the NPA is keeping the states currently, as we indicated earlier, on instruction by the NDPP, as from June this year. And we just applied the Department of Justice with states for the costing report as per the request.
Where did this come from? DOJ and CG registered cases of trafficking in persons for sexual offences. drawn from integrated case management system, December 2017, September 2010. Where did this document then come from?
Do you have an explanation?
My name is Kamukhailo Lukubo Wanderson from the Department of Justice. Yesterday we were requested to bring statistics specifically relating to Sexual Offences Amendment Act, and we requested that the statistics be drawn from the integrated case management system. The data collection is done from the register that is presented on the magistrate's desk. There's a long process. NPA has its process, but we integrate the information from the fact that the clerk of the court will collect the information from the desk of the magistrate and enter it into the system. It is integrated in the sense that it records the cases that have been prosecuted in respect of the Act, the cases that would have been considered by the magistrates, and the progress in respect of those cases. We haven't had the opportunity to present and to really state the gaps that are in this space that is presented. So it's quite difficult for us to respond, you know, the manner in which we are asked.
Mr. Chair, I think it's been quite clear to us for a while that the statistics are not reliable in this department and they're quite chaotic. I mean, can I ask if we have another presentation on a different day, some other time, specifically devoted to the integrated, so-called integrated management system? What does it mean to integrate with who? Because my understanding is that this should have been integrated across all the all of these departments involved in the justice process, so that dockets will not get lost, they will not disappear, and they will be able to be tracked from the time that they are lodged until the time that they're found. That's always been my understanding of what this is supposed to be, and clearly isn't the case. Could I ask if we, on another occasion, have a separate day to deal with this particular issue?
Honourable Jeffrey, Honourable Swartz.
I just don't know whether, quite honestly, we would get anything different. But maybe I wanted to suggest that I mean, I'm not against it, but I don't think we should put too much in store for that. But maybe we should then get an input now before the Hawks on this, because now then it seems to be, this is the third set of statistics. Mm-hmm. This then seems to be what the clerks of the court are entering. And they are then entering that there are 20 cases from December 2007, when the Sexual Offences Act came into effect, until September, 20 cases in which people were charged under Section 71(1) or 71(2) of the Sexual Offences Act, which is the trafficking provision. So maybe the department should just present on that. And I mean, it is a problem that the clerk of the court records do not correspond with the prosecutor's records. But that's by the by, because they're both doing the same thing. But maybe the department should just talk briefly on this, and maybe they can also raise the Sexual Offences Act came into effect on the 16th of December 2007. So prosecutions under that act would have to be for acts that were committed after that date, not before. So I'm also a little bit worried seeing December 2007 here, that if there were cases that were registered in December 2007, they presumably would have been prosecuted under the old act, because I'm sure those offences, the acts would have been committed before the sexual offences came into effect. So it then is also a question of the reliability of these statistics from the department.
We'll spend a lot of time debating these stats, and I think maybe we need to ask the department and the NPA to get together, and once you've heard the Hawks as well, to just give us reliable stats and they can
take, you know, I don't know if we're going to meet again next week or something, so that they can just come up together and say, well, this is what the final figure is. But let's hear everything first and then give them an opportunity to lie together. It should have been done beforehand. My concern was the presentations are lacking. We had the same situation with the Child Justice Bill where at one stage the chairperson wanted to throw the act out. So we need to caution the departments, please, we are under huge pressure, and please cooperate, speak amongst yourselves before making a presentation as far as possible to assist us, so that we then have reliable data, because as we know, this is notoriously uncertain area as far as data is concerned. At the very least, the Human Science Research Council should have gone to the NPA, should have gone to the police, and just got that data and presented it. So, you know, you've had investigations since May already as to this issue. And I think that we need to, and I want to join what Mr. Jeffries is saying, we need to get reliable data as quickly as possible as to the extent of this problem, because it goes about resources. The departments want resources. We're the ones that need to give it to you. So it's in your best interests to give us the reliable and accurate data. Another issue that I would like is the issue of withdrawals. How many cases have been withdrawn of this nature? Now, we've got convictions, we've got that, but how many cases, we need to look at that as well. Maybe the Hawks will tell us about that. That's an issue that comes up at the beginning of every year when we deal with crime stats, when we deal with the Justice Department stats, NPA stats. 3 million cases. How many cases of this particular nature of trafficking were withdrawn by the prosecutors? And that's something we also need to look into as we get the extent of the problem. It's not only the extent of the convictions. Thank you, Chair.
Clarity, Mr. Chair, if I may. My suggestion regarding the case management system is not solely for this purpose. It's in general, because I think that it's quite clear that it's not where we would like it to be. And I would like to reiterate my suggestion that we get a proper presentation as to what exactly is this integrated case management system supposed to do, and what are the different roles of the different departments, and how far is it, and how long is it going to take to complete it and properly implement it, please.
Right, Mr. Cooper, just an explanation of that document and response to the issues and suggestions that have been made, please.
We acknowledge that there was, in the collection of data, we couldn't sit down and really integrate our data. The first problem that we have that has to be acknowledged is the fact that outside of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences Act and the Children's Act, there's no offense of trafficking. Following on that, with the discussions that we've been having with the portfolio committee, we acknowledge the fact that we were sitting with the problem where we just said that we did not have data, but we have come to realize that then we need to do go an extra mile to try and determine the extent of the problem. And we've as part of the solution, we have put in place a process through which, at the present moment, we are scoping the data collection that has to be done so that we can collect correct data, including crimes or offenses that are related to trafficking. And I can foresee that we'll be able to give you information in respect of cases related to Sexual Offences Amendment Act, as well as the trafficking offences created in the Children's Act. That data at least we'll be able to provide you. So the important thing is to scope the data collection that's going to be done by the departments. Once we leave here, we'll be able to do the comparative analysis that should be done between the data that is in the hands of the prosecutors, in the hands of the Hawks or subs, as well as in the ICMS. So definitely we could say that instance within a period of a week we can give you that which is in the integrated system. But anything beyond the criminal non-sexual offences related to Sexual Offences Amendment Act and the Children's Act would be information that would have to take a little bit of a longer period. But I think this is what we could work on immediately, those that are related to the current acts that we are using and that have specific offences related to trafficking.
It seems this is as far as we can go. Honourable Jeffrey, I see you want to.
See, the problem is we get told yesterday, no, this integrated case management system is working. We can give you the stats of trafficking. I mean, look, we know there's a problem around definitions of trafficking and the offence of trafficking, and it might be covered in other forms. But the Sexual Offences Act has been in effect for 3 years nearly. Which creates a specific crime of trafficking, and at least those stats should have been available. I hear the point that they can be provided, but they should have been provided already. And I just think it's and the reason that, I mean, what I don't understand with the departments is, we want to know stats so we know the nature of the problem. You should want to know stats so you know how much money you need, what resources you need to deal with it. So when it comes to employing staff, okay, do you actually need additional staff, or is the problem at this stage of such a level that additional staff are not needed? So it's that kind of thing. I don't know how we could have been given any costing without the departments, first of all, getting agreement on the nature of the extent of the problem. Basically, the costing is the thumb suck. The point that was also pointed out by Christine, that the stats that they've given, that the department have given, which is from then the court, clerks of the court, is not necessarily separate cases. It's persons charged under section 71(1) and persons charged under 71(2). But the point that Christine points out is that you might find that one person is charged under both counts, both offences, and that they're not separate cases. So it doesn't actually, it's not that accurate in terms of telling us whether these are 20 registered cases or whether the 571(2) cases are part of the 15. But I just think it's really, I don't know what, with respect, I don't know what people are doing.
And that's it's clear that there will be need for another thing.
But Chair, maybe on a more positive note, that my question around the sentencing, NPA didn't respond, and I think if that's, they're not on the stats, which was why are the sentences so low?
The sentences look so very low. There are some suspended sentences and the like. Your comment about that?
Well, Chair, Honourable Member, I think that we are at the same space where we were with sexual offences, where we used to get very low sentences at the beginning. And I think that one of the things that catalyzed a change in that was the introduction of the Minimum Sentences Act. You know, there's still a very, very much a lack of understanding of trafficking and its impact on people. And I think that, you know, we're just going through the same kind of thing that we went through in that time when sexual offences, you'd get totally suspended sentences, strange remarks being done from the bench and all of that. So I think that, you know, we need to catalyze even here, you know, to make sure that we structure the sentencing to an extent so that there can be that kind of growth in the understanding, but also in the realization of the impact, both economically and also on the person of the person trafficked. I'm glad that you raised the issue around how we actually put our steps, because even for us, sometimes we actually look at counts. It can be the same accused, but it can be different counts from the same accused person. So I think that we need to have a way in which we understand the way in which we have all of those permutations, but it must all make sense at the end of the day, you know, what the picture is out there. So I just wanted to make that point as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honourable Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just, can the NPA answer, please, how many of those cases where you aren't satisfied with the sentences has the NPA taken on appeal?
None of the cases were taken on appeal. For example, the reason why the sentence was so low, or the accused received a suspended sentence in the LOF matter, was because the witnesses did not want to cooperate anymore, and they all left Welkom. And then the prosecutor was obliged, or it was the only way out, to take, at least you could get a conviction in terms of the Sexual Offences Act, you could get the conviction on the accused, because they pleaded guilty in terms of Section 105 plea agreement. And that is the reason why there was a suspended sentence, because they had to enter into plea negotiations. Because if you don't have a witness, you don't have a case. And that is the reason why the sentence was so low. But none of the cases were taken on appeal, the sentences.
Quickly, that is obviously why we need to know the degree of cases that are withdrawn as well. Maybe you can look into that for us, where witnesses don't want to cooperate anymore, because that also gives an indication of the extent of the problem. And I'm sure the Hawks can give us an indication as well, where they're investigating cases and those matters are then withdrawn for lack of cooperation from witnesses due to whatever reason. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I just explain why the other cases weren't taken on appeal, if they weren't satisfied with the decision on sentence?
And you will see all the other cases that were finalized were finalized in terms of a plea agreement. So that is the reason why you won't take it on appeal, because you already agree on a sentence.
Okay, let's proceed. You want to explain?
I wanted to explain in terms of Mafangani.
Right.
Morning, this is Donald Kaur from the APA. The State versus Mafangani case, which was finalized in 2006, we had a discussion. I presented to the International Association of Women Judges, where I criticized the fact that the accused had been given a 47-month 5-year prison term. And one of the magistrates just responded that it was her colleague who had dealt with the matter, and she had dealt with the case as a prostitution matter, and the magistrate had not been aware that this was a human trafficking case, otherwise she would not have given a wholly suspended sentence. While we then pursued the matter with the prosecutor, who was then working, is now working with us at the soccer unit, he indicated that Elizabeth Mafangani has since disappeared. There have been attempts to trace her in the Pretoria area, and her whereabouts were unknown, so we could not pursue the matter any further.
I hope when you did that, you were careful not to be seen as interfering with the independence of the judiciary, the contempt of court, the complaining about their sentences.
I just think it's quite important, because I mean, minimum sentences are not popular, but we need to have them if they're needed, and it's then quite crucial as to what sentences are being given. Obviously, it's understood if there's a plea bargain. Then obviously there's going to be a lesser sentence in order to get that guilty conviction. But then I think the point that Mr. Swart raised is why were the problems with prosecuting the case? What more can we do in this bill to improve things for the witnesses? But the point I just wanted to take up is I'd understood Advocate Toy to say then all the cases were plea bargained. And I want to check if that is in fact the case. We've got here
four, it seems. Patel, Sawat Khan, the long, I think, Thai name with a W, and the Eloff and Godfrey case. All of those are suspended sentences. Were they all pre-bargained?
The Patel matter was pre-bargained. So what kind? So plea bargain, and also the Pattaja, Waitaja, and anything another. I can't answer with regards to Mashwangani and.
So Eloff was also plea bargain.
That is correct. Yes.
Mashwangani was not plea bargain. There was a
on the stats, but I think what would be useful is if the NPA could do a submission on the prosecution of cases. I mean, the aim being, do we need? I mean, well, okay, we've got is there a problem of as Advocate Madrakweni said in the beginning of the magistrates not giving harsh enough penalties? Because now it seems it's a slightly different picture. It's plea bargaining, which you then can't blame the magistrates because, or the prosecutors for that matter, because they would be then. Then why is there so much plea bargaining going on? Is it a lazy prosecutor, or is it a problem as Advocate Tutoya said of well, the witnesses are not there. And they're worried about securing a conviction. So can we get an analysis of why was the plea bargaining? And then lastly, if it was plea bargaining because there were problems with the witnesses, what should be done, what could have been done to solve that problem that we could maybe do in terms of the act? And then maybe the last point, I mean, it's something I'd raised with Advocate Madrakweni separately, outside after the meeting. Are there areas in terms of, I don't know if we've had enough input from the NPA around the offences section and what needs to be done to prove guilt, and are there amendments that the NPA would want to suggest for that? So, for example, I see in the Phillips case that there seems to be an issue regarding locus standi. Maybe that is something that could be addressed in the legislation for future cases, obviously. But can we get further inputs from the NPA on those aspects as well?
Not today, Chair. but I do want to say that, you know, we are raising the issue of plea bargains. Should we be having plea bargains in these particular cases? I mean, one of the reasons why we call for all of those cases is that we want to have a post-closure analysis of all the cases and see what it is that is emerging. It was difficult enough to get the cases, but now that we've got the few that we have, we need to do an analysis of them to see what are the issues that they are raising, and are those gaps closed by the legislation, or is the legislation aiding in coming to different solutions and different actions? I do think that there could be a bit of truth in reluctance of prosecutors to actually proceed on the, you know, human trafficking charges, because there are new charges, there are challenging charges, you know. So, just like you'll find that in sexual offences matters, you'll find them at the bottom of the pile of cases, you know, given to prosecutors for them to prosecute, you know. So there is a reluctance. So we need to build, you know, their own abilities and understanding of the issues enough for them to be able to rigorously, prosecute those cases and find and create the interest in them to specialize in the area, and then that way, you know, because I can take Val anywhere, and I know that by now she has amassed enough confidence to be able to take any case of trafficking anywhere in the world. So we need to build more of those kinds of prosecutors that would rigorously do that throughout. So we do promise that we'll come back to the committee, but that's not today on the other issues that are very important.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then we proceed. Are we with your advocate, Kambule?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Praise TV Kambula from DOJ. I think that the presentation that we are required to make, it is very important to note that for this day, we did not actually expect to make a presentation. The reason for that is because that we have a provision in the bill that actually requires a number of departments to collect statistics and submit it to the portfolio committee, that is section 41 of the bill, to collect statistics and bring it to the portfolio committee that will be chaired by our DG, where then we will be required as a department to set up an information system to collate that information and also to analyze it. So then it takes away the responsibility from the department to collect statistics. So hence no preparations were made to make a presentation for today. But then yesterday we were actually requested to submit what we have in terms of the integrated management system. But then the integrated management system, as we presented yesterday, we said that it is a system that is already in place. It is being piloted in certain areas, and in others it is implemented, because it covers quite a high volume of criminal offenses, and it is a system that tracks the case from the time it is registered up to the time when the case is finalized. And it is also a system that we have a division within the department that is responsible for the development of that system and managing it as well. And the efforts to have them come here to give us more details of how the system works could not succeed yesterday. Even the things, even the efforts that we did this morning could not, because we just wanted them to come. But then, had we knew that this was going to come up, definitely would have made arrangements that they be here to give us more details about the system. The integrated management system is actually a system that also has incorporated the sexual offences, and it is, as I have indicated, it is a system that is managed by the clerk of the court and working together with the prosecutor. It is also a system that was developed with the NPA, and the NPA, having had the responsibility to submit all the offences, the common law and the statutory offences, to be part of the system. It is a system that is being under, it's actually piloted, as I indicated, in certain areas. And it is, when I say certain areas, I mean certain areas of the system. It's being piloted, and there are those where, you know, it is already implemented. I can make an example that now there are, you know, efforts to implement it in maintenance cases. But then in other offences, it is still being piloted and going through review so as to make it a perfect system that will respond to all the needs that we have. But as I may also add that it is a system that does not accommodate the trafficking in terms of the bill, because the bill has not yet been a past. Hence, we said yesterday in our presentation that we will, as soon as the bill is passed, update the system so that it accommodates the needs and it also incorporates the offences that are listed by the bill, which will be then by the X. Yesterday what we did, because we were informed, I think it was in the afternoon, late in the afternoon, that we should make a presentation of the integrated management system, the offences that are related to trafficking. That we did. This is the information that we got from a division that is responsible for that, the National Operations Center. They quickly put together this information, and it's what they are actually even working on, because they were saying to us that the traffic, the sexual offenses, I mean the cases that are related to trafficking, are the ones that are actually difficult to capture, and it is because that our it's a process that is still, that is the clerks of the court are still undergoing training on how to capture this information, because the charge sheet is put together, is compiled by the prosecutor, and then it goes to the clerk of the court, and the clerk of the court, what he or she does is just to capture that information into our system, and therefore it needs then some kind of training to be done on our clerks so as to be able to capture this information properly. The cases that you see there are the registered cases, meaning that it's all the cases that the system has managed to capture, and starting from the time of the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act. So when we say registered cases, what it means is that it's just cases that have been registered. It excludes that 20. That 20 excludes the number of cases where the number of finalized cases, the number of withdrawn cases are excluded from that number. As we have heard that from the NPA, they are saying that there are about 5 cases that have been finalized, and the cases that are pending on the roll are 15. And what we are presenting here is that 15 cases that are pending are probably cases that are reflected there. And the cases that are finalized are probably part of the cases that are registered there. And of course, we did not have time to sort of share information with NPA because of the limited time that we were given. And it is, of course, something that we will definitely do as we leave here, so as to compare the statistics and ensure that we have information that will talk to each other.
Now time to questions from Honorable Jeffrey.
I really object to the input. I mean, let's talk about limited time. At our last meeting in October, we said we wanted, there's clearly a problem about statistics, we want to know the statistics. So I really don't see how the Department of Justice, as the key department, can come and say, oh no, we didn't know we were meant to do this. Okay, we would have expected them to have coordinated it, to have got NPA together with the SAPS, with the Department of Social Development. So I really think that this claim that, okay, we only knew yesterday we had to do this, I think is outrageous. I mean, these officials should have actually done their job properly and given us what we asked for a month ago, which was more than enough time. Then just to point out that what we've been given, because yesterday we were told, you told us, Ms. Kambule, your system, I don't know if you meant to tell us, but you got to telling us that your integrated case management system could produce the statistics of the cases for the Sexual Offences Act. And it should have just been pressing a button. Now, I don't think those are the registered cases. I mean, first of all, I just one point is, presumably this is all the cases that were registered, whether they were withdrawn, whether they've been finalized. Because the case is registered when it's opened, when it goes to presumably this is the court registration, the court thing, not the police. And if it's withdrawn, it was still registered. Okay, so presumably that's all the cases from December 2007 to September 2010 that were opened, that got onto the court roll. They may have been withdrawn, they may have been finalized, but they got onto the court roll. So they're not necessarily the outstanding cases. But then the problem is that I've got is it's got there at the top registered cases, and it's numbers. But those are not, I suspect, registered cases. Those are charges. Okay? So if you take Mpumalanga, you've got, according to your stats there, you've got one case for 71.2 and six cases for 71.1. But I suspect that, in fact, you've only got one case and that those are all charges for the same case. Because I think your Ermelo case is probably the Jude Obinna case, in which there are nine accused. Doesn't say how many victims are there, but if there were six victims, then it's likely that each accused would be charged for each victim. Hence, you get six charges, but it's only one case. So we're not wanting to know the number of charges. It doesn't help us. We want to know the number of cases. Unless you're telling me that suddenly there were seven cases in Ermelo, but I doubt. I suspect Ermelo is the Obinna case. Port Elizabeth, you've got six. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, from looking at this list, you've got the Austin Christian Ndukaube Austin okay Kiand four others. If I'm not pronouncing it right. Now again, is Port Elizabeth six cases or is it actually one case in which there were because there were six victims, there were then six charges? Four victims, four charges, and then the 71.2 as an alternate. So I really just question even the efficacy of the statistic that we've been given. I don't know if it helps us. I suspect it's charges, not cases, as is at the top there.
How do you respond to this concern, Advocate Kamboi?
Thank you. I think for a start, I just want to say again that the statistics that was required, so of course the statistics in terms of the bill and the offences, and
the Sexual Offences Act that was passed.
Okay, all right, let me just withdraw that one. Anyway, I was going to go somewhere. We respect the analysis that has been made by the Honourable Member, but we indicated from the beginning of our presentation that we have a division that is responsible for the management of this integrated case management system. And those are the people who are the authors and actually people who are managing that and will be best placed then to respond to that analysis. We will therefore request that we be given an opportunity to take these questions and the analysis and the suspicions that have been mentioned to them so that they then when we come back there then given an opportunity to respond to all these questions. Thank you.
Basically, Chair, is Ms. Kambule not sure whether there are in fact 20 registered cases or whether it's maybe a lot less than that because it's 20 charges?
Would you have to respond to that now or do you want to postpone it?
I just want to say something that it will depend on the interpretation and of how the Honourable Member gives it to registered cases. But I just want to say that from the information that we have received is that these are the cases that are registered into the system, cases that come into the system, respective of what. But these are the cases that are registered in terms of those sections captured into the system. So it's not about probably the charges, but he may be right in what he's saying, but then, as I indicated, we won't be able to respond properly to his question.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think the answer is clear. She doesn't know. But I think there shouldn't be any dispute around cases versus charges. Somebody operates a trafficking enterprise. They get arrested. Presumably one case is opened by the police, case number so-and-so. It goes to court. There's one court number for that case. Within that case, then, the accused is charged, as Advocate Njokweni said, with a number of charges. And if there are, I mean, you kill, you massacre five people, there would be one presumably docket for that. If those murders all took place at the one spot, you know somebody, I get frustrated here, and I grab a gun and massacre, shoot all the people from the Justice Department to the NPA. Okay, one case docket is opened. I get charged with five murders. Okay, but it's one case. Okay, five charges. So that's clearly what we're meaning, and that's why I suspect. I mean, Ermelo is small. It's very surprising to see seven cases, but I'm sure it's one case, seven charges.
Your example scares our members. you respond?
Say that we won't have any response to that. We have people who are dealing with this. I think it will just, to have them to come here to present will actually omit all these presumptions that we are actually going through right now.
Chair, can I just ask that if we ask for information and people don't know how to interpret it, that they bring the people in future to the meeting when we ask for the presentation, so we don't have to then postpone it yet again and wait for it for another day? If they don't understand how to work the system, then they need to have somebody here to tell who does understand the system so they can answer our questions straight away.
And sure. Requires so that when we got another opportunity next week, then it should be regarded as the final opportunity on this issue.
That is what we said from the beginning, that we were actually, had we had an opportunity of bringing them quickly, that is as from yesterday, they would be here. But the efforts to do that have failed. Thank you.
When Honorable Jeffrey said, I object to that input, to me it reminded me of situations where the magistrate would hear them saying, in other words, at the beginning, the situation was fine, but immediately the person starts speaking and then becomes worse. which means, briefly, because of the things have not yet tied very well, maybe it was better to say, today we're not ready, definitely we ask for a postponement to get our house in order. When we come, they will be in a position to give you answers to this. That's one thing. Members, we've got a briefing of 5 minutes from the department, which I was saying, shouldn't we attend to them instead of keeping them for the whole morning, part of the morning? Yes.
The only problem is we're not core it, and we need to approve the salary increases. I suggest maybe we do the Hawks, because we're...
Okay.
Unless, yeah. Okay. We're five. Three. This is the NCP section. Hold on.
He's got members at S35,
okay.
Which will take a minute. Yes.
Yeah, so that the approval is allowed to. Amanda, don't go to the hotel. Okay. But no more debate. Main thing is. Okay.
And then, when I was something like 6 months having practiced there, he was appointed a magistrate. So he's my former, Your Worship, magistrate, Jirange. It's the fact that the presentation is going to be just 5 minutes. They're going to be telling us about the figures and the like, and then the after we release them. You remember me talking about being a young and flamboyant lawyer. You may ask Mr. Jirange, I used to keep a long hair, and I was very young, 1985. I think Mr. Jirange, you can start speaking. We are given assurance that we will be.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and. I will not elaborate on the references that you frequently made to Langenhoff in your addresses to the court, etc. Chair, this is a relatively simple matter. There should be two documents before members. Both are draft notices by the President. One dealing with the remuneration of constitutional court judges and judges, the other with remuneration of magistrates. Now, the position is that both of these categories of judicial officers, their remuneration must be determined by the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, much as the same as parliamentarians and members of the executive. And the President must determine the remuneration after having regard to the recommendation of this Independent Commission and also with the approval of Parliament, both Houses of Parliament. Chair, I'm not going to make this more complicated than it is. What it boils down to is the Independent Remuneration Commission made a recommendation for a 7% increase. The President saw it fit to recommend a 5% increase in line with recommendations across other categories. And that is really all that these two notices amount to. It makes provision for a salary increase of 5%, a remuneration increase of 5%. In respect of both the judges and the magistrates. If there's any questions, just one last technicality. In terms of both the acts, one is the Judges Remuneration Condition of Employment Act, the other the Magistrates Act, Parliament is required to either approve the notice or partially approve the notice. In other words, you don't need to approve the whole notice, but I just thought, bring that to your attention, I don't think it's really an issue.
If there are any questions from members of the committee. Honorable Jeffrey.
Just one, and that was with the magistrates. Mr. DeLange would know that in the past there were some problems with the categories. Have you resolved all those problems this time? I think related to the court ones and where they are, but have you resolved those?
It is not repeated in this notice this time round, so that is solved.
Right. That was the only question, correct? Members, we are dealing with the remuneration of judges as well as the remuneration of magistrates. The short of it is that the President has seen it fit to increase it by 5%. Am I correct, Mr. Dillon? And as the committee, we need to just say whether yes, we approve or we don't. That's all we need to say. And then there is a report that I'll be asking the members that we adopt this report. I have to read the report. The Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Notice of Remuneration of Constitutional Court Judges and Judges in terms of judges' remuneration and conditions of employment, and so, tabled on the 16th November 2010, and referred to it, recommend that House, in terms of Section 2, Subsection 4 of the Act, approves the said notice. Can I have any member moving for the adoption of this report? Honorable Jeffrey?
seconded Honorable Swart. The second report reads as follows. The Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Notice of Remuneration of Magistrates tabled on the 16th November 2010 and referred to it, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 12(3) of the Magistrates Act, approve the said notice. Can I get a member, Honorable Schaefer? You are moving for the adoption of the report. Of the report, seconder, Honorable Professor Ndabanda. Thank you very much. This brings us to the end. Thank you very much, members who have come to assist us.
Chairman, may I be excused?
You may be excused, Mr. Dilani. Right, I think Hawks can, in the meantime, be moving forward. I saw the gentleman was itching to start talking to us as we were sitting there. This document. Okay. Right there, you can introduce yourself and start shooting.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am Brigadier Ibrahim Kadwa. I am the acting head of the Organized Crime Investigations Component, the good guys from the Director for Priority Crimes Investigations. Since we're talking human trafficking, may I just say on a more lighter note, I've been recruited by virtue of an instruction to come and give this presentation, and noticing the robust questions this morning, I hope I'm not going to be exploited, you know, because otherwise you'll be trafficking with my mind here, you know. But I will be honest and certainly very frank with the efforts made by ourselves. I just want to inquire, I was actually asked to do a presentation on the situation relating to human trafficking. I just want to find out from this honorable committee, do you really want to hear the whole presentation, or do you want us to get to the bone about some of the issues, or?
They prefer the bone.
So are we talking just the cases and the statistics?
What I would suggest is, I mean, I've had a brief look at the presentation. I think some of the initial stuff is, you know, definitions of trafficking, not necessary. But we're trying to, I mean, the heading that you've got there, the extent of human trafficking in South Africa, we're trying to get to grips with that in terms of we're dealing with this bill, and it has cost implications. So it would be a level, a thing of okay, what is the extent of trafficking, because it will impact on the bill. So I think don't come with the anecdotal stuff, you know, that it's sex industry and sweatshops and things. It's what cases, how much have you been able to detect? What cases have you got? Then I think the case studies, as with the NPA, are quite useful in terms of getting getting a sense of a case. But things like the factors facilitating trafficking, that I don't think we need to know. But international trafficking, for example, we're told we're a transit point for international trafficking. What evidence have you got of that? So I don't know, Chair, for you, I don't know if that helps, but it's not the generalized assumptions. It would be the more specific stuff, presumably as to what the hawks are doing, or at least if they're not doing, would be aware about. And then the individual cases are fine if there's things that we can learn from them. So you would have seen from the NPA stuff that the low sentences became interesting.
It's like when you're giving evidence, the more you talk, the more scope you give for questions. Now, having you remarked about the over questioning, the more you become specific only to the issues, the less questions you will be asked.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think I basically got an indicator of the kind of issues we need to highlight.
Since this microphone is soft, can you just put it next to you? Yeah, just okay. It's softer than the other microphone.
Yeah, I think I will contextualize it, basically just giving a short journey into trafficking, confronting South Africa, and then we'll talk about what the Hawks and the police is basically doing together with our partners in addressing the phenomenon of trafficking in South Africa. Fortunately, in my case, over and above being the acting head of organized crime, I think some of the cases already reflected previously. I had a personal role in the initiation of some of it, of these cases, and I think we can talk firsthand on the coalface about some of the harsh realities. I think we are dealing with the growing pains of a new phenomenon. I think we are going to learn through trial and error. And even yesterday, coincidentally, there is an international financial action task force typologies workshop, which amongst others is looking into the phenomenon of trafficking, but particularly in terms of the issues relating to the monies of trafficking and the laundering. And even there, when the presentations are given, it comes very clear, that we do have, even internationally, while there is a huge amount of literature internationally on this subject, there is a bit of a black hole, because when you start examining and scrutinizing reports, you will see even internationally there is certain information which is in conflict between reports, and it depends who orchestrates some of the research. And I think one of the honorable members did reflect into the severe criticism of the human sciences research which was done. And I think in that case, I think what the ISS did in that case was basically do almost a post-mortem of that report and indicate that there was a lot of fear-mongering. And I think looking at the World Cup, because I had the honor of coming and presenting to the Police Portfolio Committee prior to the World Cup, because there was huge hype relating to the phenomenon of trafficking that's going to impact us. And we have done some engagements with previous countries that hosted World Cups with similar experiences. And even in South Africa, there has been huge sensationalism, fear-mongering of talking of figures of 40,000 to try and aggravate the problem. And in reality, yes, we do have trafficking in South Africa. I think there is very limited factual data. Most of it will be based on our experiences. Most of it, because it's a new area, I think we are still finding our way to the forest, and I'm sure that as time goes by, we would be able, through determination, to be able to make some sort of better inroads in this area. I think one of the important things I can say relating to the trafficking process, certainly the issues and the driving forces, which is the socio-economic factors, is very prevalent, because when we look at the process, when we talk about the issue relating to the recruitment process, you will always find, whether it be in-country trafficking or whether we're looking at the international trafficking trends, you will always find that the profile is poor or developed countries where the recruitment would take place. And the exploitation certainly would take place in the more affluent countries where the markets, where the demand is created. It is not the exclusive place, but it is the general trend. I mean, these are figures I'm not going to go through, but interestingly, what I just said in my introductory listings, there are reports that are published annually by the United Nations Office for Drugs and Crime. There's also the reports presented by the United States. And if you put the two reports together, you will see that there is certain disparities in terms of this thing, because one of the perceptions or assumptions that we are all kind of slanted to believe that most of the trafficking is generally for commercial sexual exploitation to feed the lucrative sex industry. But when you start looking and scrutinizing the reports, you will see, for example, the United States Trafficking in Persons report quotes the International Labor Organization estimates to say that for every trafficking victim subjected to forced prostitution, 9 people are forced to work. Now, how do you believe that? Because there is so much of disparity in the research. Very interestingly, an issue relating to trafficking is that women is a norm in terms of the trafficking other women. So this is one crime. Even when we look at, for example, the Honorable Professor spoke about the issue relating to Thai trafficking. What we find with Thai trafficking is certainly the ladies who are here, whether they are victims of trafficking or whether they are working in the sex industry, they would be utilized as second wave traffickers who would then try and organize through their networks in Thailand to organizers. The question is, why Thai trafficking so big? I think in my presentation, I do illustrate a research that I've taken out of Thai organized crime. And in Thailand, traditionally, there is an organized crime outfit called the Ang Yi. And one of the hallmarks of the Ang Yi has always been prostitution. And I think Thailand, over the years, with the Vietnam War and that, have created certainly a huge industry in places like Bangkok and some of the coastal resorts. And I think certainly they have seen that there is huge opportunities internationally to be able to move their people. And again, it's the issue relating to the exotic factor which makes the whole issue of the commercial sexual industry very, very attractive. So if you have people coming in from foreign countries, certainly that makes it more marketable. I mean, certainly we don't want to equate humans with fashion or something, but it is unfortunately the way the unscrupulous traffickers or the brothel bosses deal with these issues. Now, one of the other challenges we have, and this is not a challenge unique to South Africa, it is a challenge I've even seen yesterday, is the blurring lines between what is human smuggling and human trafficking. And it seems to me, even internationally, they haven't got the game altogether 100%, because even there is some sort of different kind of these things. But basically, I think as we get legislation that basically deals with the comprehensive set of these things, I think it will make it more easier to be able to look at the full Monty in terms of the issues of trafficking. I mean, yesterday one of the SMLR countries spoke about trafficking, and I mean, they spoke about men from Malawi who are basically attracted to come and work or recruited to come and work in South Africa, and they classified that as trafficking. But in our case, we would look at that as illegal migration, because most of those people who would come in, they are not coming in here by being recruited by somebody. It is a decision they would have made on their own. They just find ways of getting into South Africa, and then they would come and work. Yes, there would be elements of exploitation, because they would go and work in places that necessarily won't be career-enhancing jobs. So automatically, they would be subject to low pays and whatever it is. So it depends how we interpret such a situation. The issue relating to organ trafficking, I think we have the Netcare case, which came to the fore. I think there would be other issues as we would progress in this area. Okay, I'm not going to go into the trafficking flows in detail, but just to say that what is interesting from the cases we are dealing with is that domestic trafficking is certainly something we are detecting more frequently, especially from the rural areas of the Eastern Cape. We also see from neighboring Lesotho, we see young girls, children being recruited to go and work in brothels. And there is certainly all the traits of trafficking, because they would normally be recruited by deception, and when they come there, they're basically forced to work in brothels or in prostitution. When we're talking about victims in South Africa, from the cases we have dealt with, women constitute the largest group of victims. Okay, this is basically just a spread of the countries, and you can see the intercontinental trafficking. We're dealing with Eastern Europe, we're dealing with Russia, we're dealing with China, we're dealing with Thailand. So that's the thing. And then we're dealing closer to home in the neighboring countries. And there's it, Professor, I just illustrated to you the issue relating to. So even when we're looking at the Thai ladies, they are all not victims of trafficking. Many of them have come here basically as former sex workers who are working here. Yes, the goalposts may shift because we are dealing with organized crime, we are dealing with brothel bosses, and they definitely would be able to use the circumstances to exploit the people. So while the ladies are working for them, they will still be basically amassing the bulk of the profits out of the ladies. I think one of the things relating to issues facilitating trafficking, I'm not going to go to the usual issues of the socio-economic, but I think in South Africa as well as in the international things, because everyone is not up to speed, it's still seen as a low-risk, high-profit activity, because even internationally, you will find that because organized crime groups adapt to opportunities, they have found this a highly lucrative area. They basically move because many countries never have or still don't have human trafficking legislation. So you naturally charge with more secondary kind of charges. And in that way, in many cases, the actions were taken against the woman. And that was also the initial experience in South Africa, that they would raid brothels, we would deal with the females, and they normally get deported. But I think in the last few years, certainly we have been able to demonstrate, both as a police as well as the NPA, to really make selected cases targeting certain of the trafficking groups or the brothels where the women were exploited, and be able to generate the cases that was already presented to yourself. What I've just said earlier is regarding prostitution, it cannot be seen in isolation. Even if the exotic factor where females are coming from abroad, working in the strip clubs, working in the lucrative sex industry, they may have come all voluntarily, but there are contraventions in terms of the Immigration Act. They certainly will have ways of manipulating the immigration legislation. In terms of the profits, again, the ladies who are working there, they personally earn a lot of money, but that money is only on face value earned by them. It's actually the major role players in the sex industry who amass most of that money. Certainly when we're looking at the issues relating to the sex industry, it's not confined to the bright lights and the urban areas. It has moved to the platteland. We are doing operations in some of the more call it up and coming towns, and again, the issue which Advocate from the Bail spoke about, the debt bondage, that is a real issue where the people have to work, and then again, before they can finish the debt, they can be sold on to a new brothel, because they need to recycle ladies to be able to make it attractive. Okay, I think in the issues related to forced labor, I think we know very little to be able to this thing, but these are some of the areas in terms of information that is coming to hand to say that these could be the areas we need to look into it. Certainly, not to create fear-mongering and that, but certainly we go to a lot of the massage parlors, we go to a lot of the sauna clubs, especially when we're dealing with the Chinese people. You can see when we start some of the interviews, there is elements of trafficking, but the biggest problem is the fear factor in these ladies who are working there, whether they are victims or whether they are working there. But they are normally either coached or reluctant to be able to cooperate with the police or the authorities. And these are some of the things that certainly frustrate law enforcement activities. Now, currently, we have five organized crime projects that we are looking. Advocate van der Veel spoke about the Thai 1 and the Thai 2 case. The Thai 1 case was the case I was personally involved in. It was one of the first cases we took on in KwaZulu-Natal. And we basically wanted to try and put the theory about what was human trafficking and look at it in practice and see if we could try and find some sort of evidence in that regard. And I think in KwaZulu-Natal we have a center of excellence. We are well supported by immigration, by the prosecutors, by all the other role players down in the food chain. And with that case that we have done, we spent quite a lot of time, firstly just interviewing the ladies. The ladies being interviewed, some again were reluctant to talk. Eventually, some of the ladies decided they would like to cooperate. The case is still ongoing on the roll. It was caught at the end of 2006. We have ladies there in witness protection. So one can see that some of the difficulties in trying to just secure people to be able to drop the high flyers involved in this regard, or rather say that the kingpins in this issue. So the issue relating to how we deal with the females, you know, you have to also look into other considerations, because some of them normally would want to just go back. They don't want to cooperate. They don't want to get any further involvement in the judicial process. Now, the three cases that are at the bottom, Saki, Hula Hoop, and Lookout, are all dealt with by our Eastern Cape organized crime people, mainly dealing with domestic trafficking. There is involvement of our Nigerian people basically involved in one of the operations. And in this case, there is instances where girls are recruited by deception in the Eastern Cape and then taken on to Free State and KwaZulu-Natal to go and work mainly again in the sex industry or as prostitutes. Okay, I'm not going to go into these case studies. I think Advocate van der Veel has already spoken about it. Okay, in terms of reported cases, we are talking in terms of the Section 71 of trafficking in persons for sexual purposes. For 2007-2008, in terms of our official stats, we have 8 cases. In terms of, sorry for the 2.5, is 25. Actually, in my presentation, it is correct. I can just show you. I think that was a mistake. It's 25 for 2008-2009. And then there's 24 cases. I don't think we want to split a human being, you know. 2009-2010, we had 24. And then for this year up to now, 16 cases in terms of Section 71. And then in terms of the Children's Act, we have 12 cases only for this year, none for the previous year on our official stats. Okay, in terms of what we are doing, I think I'm not going to spend too much time, but just to say that it is one of the areas that we are encouraging all our units, all our provinces to work together with our role players to be able to address the issue relating to human trafficking. These are the coordinators that we have in the various provinces. Okay, in terms of training and capacity building, I think with the World Cup and even long before that, we started a systematic process of training people in the front line at organized crime, at the ports of entry, as well as people in visible policing. Okay, in terms of our partnerships, we are within the intersectoral task team, which is headed by the National Prosecuting Authority. Okay, in terms of challenges, I think the one issue that we're dealing with is the transnational nature of trafficking. Now, trafficking, especially when we're dealing with the intercontinental trafficking, dealing with some of our neighboring countries, there can be issues of delay, even though we have mechanisms like Interpol and others that we are, that doesn't allow for a very free flow. So it will be areas that we would need to try and work some protocols, how we are going to deal with some of these countries.
In every time that we are running an operation, one of the things we have seen as a new trend or modus operandi among the ladies in those places, it is very clear that they are coached what to say. And this certainly means that we have to be able to do much more reconnaissance in a place to be able to know what exactly is the role. So it will have impacts in terms of costing to do some of the operations. And it sometimes takes a lot of persuasion, takes days before we can start getting people to start talking to us so that we could start gaining the information and understanding the trafficking networks. Language barriers, and one of the problems we deal with, for example, when we're dealing with Chinese brothels, some of the interpreters we use, we have found on occasions, my practical experience I can talk of, is that there is collusion, and again, it makes it very difficult to try in advance to say to somebody, we are going to be working in the Joburg area. Immediately he knows if we need him, he needs to alert people in the Serildene area or wherever these places are operating, because he will get a sense. They also have their ways. And even some of those people that we have are themselves a little bit dubious. So again, to try and find the right interpreters can be a problem. The fear of retribution. I think one of the things the police, the MPA, has been praised with is with our engagement with the NGOs as well as with the embassies, is when they call ourselves relating to rescue missions of victims in brothels or in safe houses, our response time is the issue. We work on the rationale of life and limb. We respond immediately. But there are certain problems also with that, because when you hit those premises, you can have problems with civil claims. You can have other issues of constitutional issues. But I must say, the one thing that we have demonstrated is acting on the issue of life and limb. We go and we immediately rescue. We would spend time with the embassy, especially the Thai embassy. We have developed extraordinary relations. They really go the extra mile in trying to assist ourselves, work with ourselves, so we can understand some of those pictures. Now, one of the things we find, for example, if you're dealing with the adult females working in the brothels or in the sex industry, which most of our operations are focused on, you will find, for example, all the Thai Chinese ladies, they will have their sugar daddies they are married with. These are marriages of convenience. So immediately you stop her. She says, no, I'm just visiting a friend. I'm not doing nothing here. I'm basically married. And you'll find that they are normally married to South African people. When you look at that marriage, you can see that there is something questionable, but it doesn't allow you to pounce and act with any sort of decisiveness, because these are considerations you have to make, whether it is genuine, whether it is something that as mutual adults he has agreed that his wife could work in such a place. Certainly, if you look at the issues of visas, the issues of work permits, there are issues that we would need to try and improve the game in that area. Because, for example, although the strip industry is not technically illegal, but what we are finding is that the bosses in the strip industry normally have an inclination to bring in these ladies intercontinentally. They basically have already manipulated ways that they can secure them to work as exotic dancers, strippers, and basically there is elements of exploitation, and that we have dealt with some of the cases there. But again, it's a bit of a problem, because you will find that the ladies who are working there, they will find all sorts of ways now suddenly to just withdraw out of cooperating with the police. And without their cooperation in certain instances, it's very difficult to bring the collaboration you want with the evidence on the police side. Certainly in South Africa and internationally, you know, the issue of human trafficking, with our crime situation, I think we also have to look at the competing interests, you know, with other serious crimes. Whilst there are champions we have, both as police officers and prosecutors who are focusing in this area, it will take time, I think, before we could settle in this area. I think when the new legislation come out, it won't surprise me that the people in the sex industry may even try and abuse, you know, the privileges, because there's a lot of emphasis on victim assistance. So you may find they would develop schemes on how they could enjoy the perks the government is giving. The issues of corruption is certainly a serious challenge. You will find that in the sex industry or the human trafficking, there is things that have actually resulted in the people being able to work there because of certain corruption that exists. I think the international best practice is a paradigm shift to the 4 P's as opposed to the 3 D's. And basically that's, I think, what the Honourable House and all who are committed in this direction would want to see. I think that experience at the bottom is again a demonstration. It is not something that we were unique in South Africa. Internationally, this is what you find, that you will find that most of the people are basically looking on the deportation level, and that historically, and through good awareness, through good commitment internationally, we are, I think, evolving to the 4 P's. I think what the Honourable House asked earlier on is basically going to be the way forward. I think whether we have the law or whether we have to start now, we certainly have to commission comprehensive research. The research that we would have to basically look at must give us a more holistic picture in terms of what the trafficking situation in South Africa. I think at the moment a lot of it is slanted on the commercial sexual side. We would need to start understanding more in terms of the labor side as well as the other issues, and that would help in how we would prioritize. It would help in how we would basically prioritize intelligence-led operations, and to see what is the most serious harm caused out of this and how we can do harm reduction in this regard. The issue of the national database, I think, is obvious from the robust questions we had this morning. The interagency strategy we would need, so that means we can work as a joint-up government. And I think with the human trafficking, one of the things that not only ourselves, but I think internationally, they're starting to put initiatives to see how we can look on the money laundering side, because I think some of the wealthiest bosses on organized crime are certainly involved in the human trafficking or in the commercial sexual exploitation. I thank the Honourable House.
Right, thank you. It's time for question, Professor Lavandava. Honourable Jeffrey.
Thank you, Chair. My first comment is to thank the presenter for giving us more insight into the Thai situation. And having said that, I've got a small question. Have you found any correlation between human trafficking and illegal mining, which has become a norm and a serious problem in this country?
Thanks. Before that, take also the one question from Honourable Jeffrey.
Let me just write them. Otherwise I'm going to...
Okay. Just give me a chance once to write it down. There will be another question from Honourable Schaefer.
Look, slide 25, the reported trafficking related cases, are those, I mean, you heard the questions to the department, would those be dockets rather than charges? So in other words, could one say, look, 2009-10, there were 24 cases that related to trafficking. In other words, one not charges as with theirs, and so basically it's an issue relating to that. And then I think it would be, well, what's happened to them? Because you've seen the NPA statistics that are quite a bit lower. So it would be useful to get an analysis of presumably a charge was opened, then if it didn't go to court, why didn't it go to court? What were the reasons? So that's sort of one. But two, at the moment, is anyone actually sitting with NPA, taking that and the data there, and then going to NPA and saying, let's compare? Is anyone doing that at the moment? I noticed that is sexual and child. Oh yeah, the other thing also, as you would have seen, maybe you could have an overlap. Definitely from the NPA figures, you've got a case which involves adult victims and child victims. So that might fit in as a you might count it as an extra one, but in fact it's part of the 16, not part of the I mean, it's not 28 cases this year, it's actually 27, because one of those child trafficking cases actually was also a sexual trafficking case with adults. No labor figures at all. Presumably, that means nothing's been detected. But I don't know if you just want to comment maybe more about the problems of detection of the labor ones. One would imagine that the best people would be the Department of Labor inspectors going around. And is there any linkage between them and yourselves or other components of the police where if they discover an employment situation where they suspect this trafficking, that they're able to have people to refer it to? They don't just go to the station which maybe doesn't know how to deal with it. So that was on the labor one. I've got another question relating to administration, but I think I'll more come back to that one later. Last one, really, the statement that we are a transit country. Even the HRC said, well, that's the allegation, but there's no evidence. Have you got any evidence of that? And that evidence would either be people that get arrested here who are going to be transited out. I don't know whether you would know about or who would know about people detected in other countries who were trafficked through South Africa, but presumably one would have. I see somewhere, I don't know if it was yours or whose it was, that there seems to be trafficking to Thailand, which was odd. I thought they were coming from Thailand. Maybe I misread the thing then.
To Macau.
To Macau?
Yes.
Trafficking to Macau. Okay. But it's this transit. I'm interested in this transit issue. So I would have thought there would have been, yeah. But anyway, the countries that South Africans or people are being trafficked through South Africa to, surely even if our systems are not that good in terms of detection, these other countries, particularly if they're more developed countries, would pick it up, and there would be then some kind of statistics that we, rescued 16 Thai women who had actually been transited through South Africa. Is there anything that you would have of that, or anyone else for that matter, because it may not fall under your jurisdiction? Yeah, Ms. Liz.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Can I just, your figures that you've given on your big map of your major source countries, I mean, you've given huge figures there of 200,000 domestic sex industry, 50,000 overseas. I don't quite get, are you saying that most of those aren't actually trafficking cases, but they're coming here illegally? Is that what you're actually saying?
Is it not too, I'll answer.
Okay, all right. It seems like the numbers there are so large compared to the number of cases that you actually have had reported. Yeah, no, it's international, but still. I mean, and the thing is, your figures then for since 2007, do you have any idea how many of those are international trafficking cases and as opposed to internal trafficking cases? And then do you respond only to complaints from people, or do you do any proactive investigations into trafficking cases? Because it's just the anecdotal stuff that we hear, the numbers are just so big compared to what we're seeing from yourself and from Justice, even though we can't really work out what the figures are from Justice. But it doesn't seem like there are a huge number of cases. Can you comment on that? Do you think the problem is bigger than what's actually being reported or not? And there was one other now. Yes, and just as far as, you did mention people in witness protection and so on. Is it a really huge problem trying to get people to consent? Because one of the issues with this legislation is whether we should, whether adults should be have to consent to the issue being reported. Now, I mean, my view is that they will often not consent because they're too scared. How much of a problem is it for you to get people to cooperate? Is it worth our while to look into that? Thanks.
Right, you can respond to the questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think I'll start ladies first. go on that route. Okay, to the Honorable Sheikh, just to say, firstly, international versus domestic. Now, before I get to the international versus domestic, this is a study done by an expert on the Thai organized crime. And in the publication that he had, this is the figures that is quoted. It's a very extensive publication about Thai organized crime. Now, this is talking basically the figures relating to, I mean, the people who have been to Bangkok and to Pattaya and that can basically know how pervasive the problem is in the domestic sex industry there. And certainly it has now become international because of the demand, and I think people have experiences there, and that experience is certainly like a Toyota, it translates somewhere, you know. So that's basically talking in a bigger way. In South Africa, what I can tell you is that from our empirical understanding of the situation, the Thai seems to be, in terms of the indoor sex industry, certainly the more prominent people for whatever the reason. Also, the issue between us and Thailand, we don't need visas either way, you know, so it's easy to be able to get them. Whereas when we look at our Eastern European countries, certainly there is a huge and very intensive process of screening and that kind of things. Despite there is elements of collusion, it makes it more expensive to be able to bring them. And I think people are working in terms of cost to return of investment. And when you look at the Thai, I mean, we know it's a cheap destination to visit, but I think paying them is also cheaper versus paying on the other side. I hope that clarifies that, ma'am. The issue relating to the cases, I think the cases that were demonstrated both by Advocate van der Bale as well as the cases I spoke about, the cases done by the Hawks is generally proactive cases. So most of the cases that we have shown you here is all through information we received, and then we would basically initiate operations. But the cases that would be on the registered cases that was provided as official stats, that will be a combination of proactive as well as addressing. How big the problem is, certainly, you know, we haven't got accurate data to this thing. But I think what we can say is certainly there is human trafficking. It is a growing industry. How big it is, I think it is something that we would have to learn more about, to get more knowledge and expertise in that area, and I think that will be across the spectrum, and that's one of the things I've suggested in the way forward. The issues relating to consent, ma'am, if I understand, or the issue relating to witness protection, I think we have those ladies 4 years in witness protection, you know, and one of the things is it also requires a lot of persuasion by the prosecutors as well as the police to be able to keep somebody so long. And these are the deliberate tactics used by the organized crime bosses to be able to delay the cases, and hopefully either the witnesses will lose interest or something will go down, there will be some misfortune down the line. But fortunately, up until now, we have had the determination, we had the very good patience of these ladies to keep in there. There were a lot of challenges, I can assure yourself. The issue relating to consent, I hope I understand the question correctly. Are you asking the issue of the consenting to getting involved?
Yeah, in the legislation we are distinguishing between children and adult victims, and the proposal has been made in the bill that adults have to consent before certain practitioners or workers can actually refer that matter onto the police. Now, I mean, my view is that very often they won't consent because sometimes they're under the influence of drugs or whatever else, or they're too scared or whatever. Now, I mean, in your view, do you think it's a real problem, or is it, I know it's difficult to persuade them, but do you think it's still reasonably possible to persuade them to actually lay the charges, or do you think their consent should be necessary, or do you think that the people who are treating them or looking after them should actually not have to get their consent to refer it to you?
I think we are dealing with a very difficult area, a very muddy kind of area, and I think the important thing is, as I've indicated, you know, many times you are also responding in the
blindly, because you get somebody calling with information to say there's a victim of trafficking in a safe house needing urgent assistance, you know. And knowing the manifestations and the dynamics, which I've already told you about coaching and all of those things, I think a sensible approach, a sober approach would be to basically take each case on its merits, deal with these people. If at the end of the day they don't want to cooperate, that means they're not giving their consent, and then you make a valued assessment on that case.
Okay. I hope I answered the Honourable Schaefer.
I've answered the other two questions, sir. I never forgotten. I just wanted to
clear my water if I had one, you know. Okay.
Not that you hope you will forget that.
Yeah, no. I've got the thing. I've written, sir. Okay. The issue relating to the illicit mining. Certainly the issue of illicit mining is one of the priority areas at the Hawks, and I think the government is now focusing on, because it is a problem that has erupted. There is information suggesting, because we have foreigners, because if you look at the mining industry, you do have people from our neighboring countries who work in this industry, and some of these people are either former employees, or you would get certainly people coming in there because, I mean, news travels fast. I mean, it's certainly a gold rush kind of situation. And you will find various kind of dynamics involved in such a situation, where you will get, again, opportunistic people who will try and recruit people to come, and then there will be issues of exploitation. There will be issues where somebody is amassing the money. So that there is some new information. It's still at the infancy stage, and we are looking into it. But I think we have quite a good commitment in being able to deal with the whole phenomenon of illicit mining and the zamas and all the things that goes with it. Okay, the issue relating to statistics comparing with the NPA, I came here on short notice. I told you I was, it wasn't a joke, I think maybe I was recruited at short notice to come and do this. So, as a victim of that, I think my answer is very short to you. Is to say, no, for the purpose of this, we have not done any kind of comparison for this or in the past as far as our reported cases. But in terms of day-to-day working relationships, because we have a very good arrangements with the National Prosecuting Authority, as far as the organized crime component is concerned, we have the initiative where we have the dedicated prosecutors like Advocate Van der Beek. So if we as the Hawks is dealing with a case that we would especially would want to try and graduate to racketeering, to be able to throw the whole armory that we have, because as you know, one of the challenges that we have is some of the earlier cases that are there were dealt with through creativity on the part of police and the law enforcement. So we naturally need very good guidance, very good support from the prosecutor. So on that basis, there is a lot of exchange, and I think the cases which Advocate Van der Beek, as far as my understanding is concerned, is based on more of the organized crime cases that the prosecutors are dealing with. Regarding the transit country, I think again, this is a combination of what I've included there from what my own understanding and our understanding as the Hawks is. Firstly, the IOM, which Advocate Njokweni spoke about, I think they initially were the authoritative kind of body that kind of laid the platform to be able to give the initial assessment of what trafficking in the country is. These were the three statuses that they have accorded. But what I can say is, from my own understanding, especially when you're dealing with the Chinese and when you're dealing with the Thai, certainly with the good flight networks we have through OAF, Tambo, they are moving through here. What we're also finding is, again, as I said, there is a blurred line between human smuggling and human trafficking, and I think we will need to improve our understanding. But as yourselves know, that at OAF Tambo International Airport, the police interventions have been quite intense in recent years. And what we find, for example, if I just take the people from the Indian subcontinent, the Pakistanis, the Bangladeshis, and the Indian nationals who come from there. Now, firstly, the difficulty for them is the good work done by our Durco or the Home Affairs there is that visas are quite difficult for them to acquire to come to South Africa. So what they normally then do is they will obtain
in one or other way visas for one of the neighboring countries like Lesotho, Mozambique, Swaziland, which has good shared borders with ourselves, and we're talking about ungazetted border posts. So what they would normally do is they would buy a ticket transiting over Tambo International Airport, get into, we basically use as a third country to get in there. Once they get in there, they got their, basically their networks, their facilitators who help them cross the ungazetted border posts. Now, in the human smuggling domain, I think in recent years, there has been, again, good operations, but we are trying to take it a step further to understand, because when they talk about human smuggling, I think, which I'm talking the obvious to this house, is they are generally saying that these people are procuring a service in order to come to South Africa and then they are free to be here. But I think if we start drilling into this and understanding the practical dynamics, it's you're getting people coming from poverty-stricken places in the rural parts of Bangladesh, Pakistan. Many of these people don't have money to buy their next meal. Now, certainly, this is where the elements of trafficking maybe need to be explored, because they will be, because as we look with the issue in South Africa, when we look at the, whether it be the informal sector or whether we look at, or rather say, the front line of the business chain, you know, we're looking at smaller retail stores, cell phone shops run by various foreign nationalities, you will find that as a general working arrangement, they prefer having their own kind and blood and flesh working there as opposed to some of the local people. And many of those people, because of the kind of arrangements in those countries, they will arrange with the people in the village that they must bring these people up here. They will pay certain advance monies to start financing the air tickets and whatever it is. And once they come here again, the issues of debt bondage and that are the reality. So these are things I think we would be able, once we get the fully-fledged legislation, to be able to start venturing into together with the National Prosecuting Authority.
I'm from the police service. I'm responsible for the crime statistics. And maybe after that question, I would just add on to the question about counts or charges and how we count and how difficult it is to count specific types of crimes like this. And maybe I think that is necessary after all the remarks made here this morning.
Jay, thank you. As we understand that it's largely a hidden crime that we're still dealing with, although we've had trafficking in terms of the Sexual Offences Act for 3 years, but it seems because of the reluctance of witnesses to come forward, the intimidation, there's a lot of problems with data, with understanding the extent of the problem, and a lot of your projects are proactive, you're going out. Can I just ask you then, the cases that you are investigating, how many cases, and you might not have the at hand, but how many cases are withdrawn due to witnesses not cooperating, or where you reach a point that also gives us an indication of a problem, even though there isn't a conviction or an ongoing investigation, the withdrawal, that there is an issue there. And then you touched on the issue of monitoring the border posts. Clearly, there needs to be a lot more done there. From my engagement yesterday with the Home Affairs representative, the collusion on both our land borders and maybe to a lesser degree at the airports, but do the hawks have projects? Because there are allegations of collusion from Home Affairs and your policemen on the ground level at border posts. And it is a bit of a concern if you look at the earlier stats that were given. Messina and your border provinces seem to have no cases of trafficking, which one would have thought that there are a lot more. If you have an estimated 3 million Zimbabweans in South Africa, I'm sure there would be a number of trafficking cases involved there. So just your comments on that as we're trying to ascertain. I'm fully in agreement with you that the trafficking is growing, and as public awareness is growing about it, the people will come forward. But that's the dilemma. to get the exact data. But we're fully supportive of this legislation. But the key is, to what degree do we allocate resources then, where we don't really know the extent of the problem.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a small matter. Looking at the major source, this is an eye-opener indeed. But I would like to request the presenter to comment. Swaziland is conspicuous by its absence. What is the reason for that?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start with Honourable Swartz here. The issue relating to withdrawal of cases, I mean, there are a lot of dynamics that play out here. For example, when we do a rescue operation, as I've indicated, our immediate priority is life and death. We will get out there, we will immediately respond, we will then try and work out ways of how we're going to deal with it, but it's going to require a certain amount of creativity also on the part of our first responders. So what we would do is, if we've got a victim who's willing to, for example, if the victim say, I'm being held against my will, we straight away got a common law charge of kidnapping, and then we would see. But now you're going to get the issue where the victim is saying, listen, I'm not willing to make anything, and by the way, we're dealing with maybe a Thai lady, she can't talk, so it takes us maybe a day or two to get that one. Or what we would immediately do in a place like that, firstly we would ask the lady through some other way, does she have a passport with her? If she doesn't have a passport with her, we immediately engage Home Affairs. And then, because that makes it a statutory offence where a third party may not keep your passport. And also one of the indicators or red flags for that there is some sort of trafficking red lights here. Then we would look at other things in the Immigration Act. So what we're basically doing is, yes, we may not be able to use the victim, but we're still working out ways, and we are pursuing that kind of angle. So we still try and make some sort of action against that place. One of the other things that we do, and I think that was a question asked by the Honourable Schaefer here, is the issue relating to the operations we're doing as the Hawks. Now, because of some of these harsh realities on the ground, we prefer first doing a proper assessment of what we're dealing with. And we would normally prefer doing proactive operations, even if it is not a long-term thing, just to target a place where there is some information, credible information. We do the groundwork maybe over a week or two, and then we would basically do that. And that way, we can limit the problems as far as withdrawal of cases, because as the police, we have been able to provide corroborative and best evidence that we can present before court. Now, when we're dealing with a situation like that, we may not reflect Section 71 always. We'll then be dealing with keeping a brothel, earning the proceeds of a brothel and that kind of things. But at the end of the day, we are still disrupting and we are still dismantling a human trafficking chain network there. So that's the first thing. I hope I answered it quite succinctly. The issue relating to border posts and corruption, I think I've reflected it. It is one of the cancerous issues that is impacting us, I think, not only for human trafficking, but I think in the broader domain of organized crime, I think the whole issue of illegal immigration and the issue of corruption comes to the fore. So the problem, I think, is more general than just specifically to organized crime. But we had in the past, I think we've seen some of the stuff that organized crime before, we were the Hawks. We have targeted Home Affairs officials, we have targeted ports of entry and border post officials in previous operations, especially from Lesotho, Bait Bridge, we have done those operations. And I can confirm that we continue to mount such operations against some of the rot we have in the front line of law enforcement. As far as resources, what degree is going to be required, I think at the moment we have done, I'm saying this not subjectively, but I think that there is a lot of champions. They have achieved a lot with a little, but I think if we really have to deal with the new human trafficking legislation, with the high expectations that are there, and also with the issues relating to victim support and all of the things that will come with it, and if we have to do it very methodically, professionally, where we have to may even spend days on end
just interviewing people, you're talking about translation fees, you're talking about police officers who have to go, and sometimes we have police officers, because of the issues of corruption, we have to use a third unit to be able to operate in a certain area because of the risk. So these are going to be issues that we would need to look at. But yeah, we are going to require more resources. If we have to do some of the investigations in terms of the transnational dimension, where we have to put certain protocols, where we have to put certain bilateral arrangements for cooperation and quick exchange of information, quick exchange of obtaining evidence, then again, we're going to be looking at travel and subsistence costs into some of these countries. Sir, one less country, the better, Professor. If Swaziland is not reflected, be happy, sir. Because, no, in terms of the cases we dealt with and in terms of some of the things that we've also looked at obtaining from reports from the IOM, and that's the picture that we have, sir. But, you know, I think this is just, I'm not saying this, as I told, major source countries. This is not the total and exclusive picture, because we don't need to be rocket scientists. We open up the classified and you see Basti, Swazi, you know, you'll find all of those kinds of things. And we don't know what are the relationships with such people.
Right, so you wanted to come in, if you can just start by introducing yourself.
I'm Chris de Kok. I'm the head of the Crime Information Analysis Center, or these guys called Research and Statistics of Crime Intelligence South African Police Service. I was asked to support the Brigadier in his presentation, or at least to support where there's questions or uncertainties. Now, actually my section, or that specific section, is responsible for crime statistics. And what we are basically talking about here is crime statistics. Now, I think there's sometimes a lot of people think that crime statistics is something we, at a certain point in time, we just go into the docket stores and we just count the dockets, and that is how we then come to the crime statistics. It is much more complex than that. How are crime statistics generated? And it will also answer the question of counts or charges and cases. Crime statistics is generated. A crime incident happened. During that crime incident, various different crimes may have been committed, and somebody, the victim or victims, go to the police station or they phone the police and they arrive and a docket is open. In that docket then, the statements are included in the docket. If there are various victims, each one will give a statement that will be included in the docket. And then somebody in the station, in the community service center, will say, based on the statements, based on the information, the following crimes were committed, and the following number of crimes, because sometimes there can be more, like the case which was mentioned by the Honourable Member of a shooting incident, or the case that he remembered, that he go on a shooting spree and then... Now, in that case, each victim, each person who died in that situation will be a count. It will be one count. So we can have 20 counts of murder, a drive-by shooting, or a bomb explode and 20 people die, it will be 20 counts of murder. One docket. Now that will then be registered on the crime administration system. Also, during an incident, more than one crime can actually... The docket will be registered, CAS number so and so and so, will be registered on the crime administration system. Also, the counts, each count will be registered. There can be even a whole mixture of crimes. For example, house robbery, one person was shot dead, that is a murder.
two people were hit by the bullets, that's two attempted murders, and one of the ladies in the house was raped. Now that is how it happens. Now the Sexual Offences Act is actually, strictly speaking, quite a new bit of legislation. I mean, it's still fresh and new. Now a lot of offences were added to the original, the ones that we had 2 years, 3 years ago, before this was enacted. We had rape, basically, and we had indecent assault. Those were the two sexual offences that we usually normally used when we registered those kind of offences. And then came the new Sexual Offences Act, and in there was included a whole lot of other sections and other offences, including the ones on human trafficking, which is only on the sexual part of human trafficking. It doesn't include the labour and other permutations of trafficking. Now, I must just also say, you must remember, we have got 1,118 that also differ nearly day by day. But the latest count is 1,118 police stations in the country. And in that, community service centers where these things are registered on the crime administration system, there can be roughly, say, 20 or 30,000 police officers working there. Some constables, some sergeants, some will be more senior, but not too senior. Now, they're all trained, and they are constantly trained, and you tell them how to register these crimes, and we are checking how they are registering these crimes. But this is quite, as I say, quite something new. Even the ones that were added were even very new, because, I mean, we all knew what is rape, although rape were also changed a bit. The definition had changed. Now one can just think that a lot of mistakes can still occur in the registration of these crimes. And I must even say, even if the new act is enacted tomorrow, or very soon, that will now be added. But if somebody, can we just imagine for one moment, how are we going to register a case of human trafficking? Because human trafficking is also another bit of there's a difference in human trafficking versus other crimes like rape. Rape, usually the victim will phone the police, or the victim will go to the police station if there was rape. But human trafficking is one of those crimes which we call crimes, we called it previously crimes generated by police action, but we have now changed it to crimes related to police action, the reason being people thought that the police are committing these crimes, and we were a bit sensitive about that. So this year sometimes they do, but not always. So we have changed that a little bit and say no, it's related to police action, like drugs, like illegal firearms. Now, drugs is easy. If we all walk down the street and we do body searches and we hit a club or two or a cafe or something and we find drugs there, well, that's all right. Now we can go, and as police officers, we can go and register this case. But can you imagine human trafficking? If we now go and we hit 30 clubs this evening in Cape Town, massage parlors and whatever we have here, and we clean them out, and we arrest people for, under the Sexual Offences Act, we can arrest the clients, because that's here, we can arrest them. We can arrest the sex workers, that we can do. There's lots of sections under which we can arrest them. We can arrest the owner and the manager and everybody. But now we're taking them to the local police station. And the question can be asked, under what will it be registered? And then also, which makes things more complex, this is a very hidden crime. All over the world, internationally, this is a very hidden crime. It is a very difficult crime. Because we can't only look at sex work. I mean, we must also look at labor exploitation. The so-called sweatshops or factories and things like that, people who are exploited labor. And that is a very broad concept. I mean, when are you exploited? I think many of us
of all of us who did a work sometime or another can feel that sometime in their career they were a little bit exploited. They didn't get the pay that they wanted, and or they worked too hard or something like that. So it's a very difficult concept. When are you exploited? When is it? Is it when you are locked in the factory and you can't get out? Even if there's a fire, you can't get out of that building. Is it when you are virtually kept in chains? And the very same apply to sex work. When are you, because I mean all sex work, there are many people who will argue, and I think we can argue, I'm actually a sociologist, to refer to the Honorable Professor who said we must go to departments of sociology. Now my past, I was a researcher for 20 years at the Human Science Research Council, and I'm a sociologist. But I think if we take sex work or prostitution, the argument can be made out that all of it is actually exploitation, sexual exploitation. I mean, it's not, nobody is there voluntarily. I'm not 100% sure if there are many volunteers there. But the issue is, what I'm saying is, you can imagine if this cases, this new, relatively very new cases, is registered at the police station. How is it going to be registered? And also, even the identification of these cases. If we raid these 20 clubs this evening, how are we really? You will need very, very proper and very strong debriefing of each of those sex workers to establish if she was trafficked or not, before you can even say, okay, here we have a case of human trafficking, or no, this one we will charge. Actually, she's not a victim, she is a perpetrator, because under the very same act you can charge a person as a perpetrator or as a victim, but you will have to establish, is he a victim or is he a perpetrator? Just maybe on to also even illustrate to you, then we come to counts. Now when we come to sexual offences, counts is a very complex issue. Basically, we say all property-related crimes, where we talk about things, housebreaking, theft of motor vehicle, theft out of motor vehicle, those kind of things, we count per case. So if we read statistics in the annual report of the South African Police Service, or the minister released that, it is counts per cases. Stock theft, yeah, per dockets. Stock theft, for example, if we say there were 40,000 stock theft, that doesn't say only 40,000 animals were stolen. Some of those cases may include 100 animals, they may even be very expensive cattle, or it may be one chicken. I mean, but we count cases, and that is international, how it's done internationally. Then when we come to crimes against persons, crimes against the person, which include the murder, the attempted murder, the assaults, the sexual offences, which is crimes against persons. Then we count actually people, victims. But even that becomes very difficult, because if we talk about sexual offences, now it is very difficult. For example, rape. Do we count, or can we be absolutely sure that when we count rape, do we count the number of victims? Do we count the number of perpetrators? Or do we count the number of penetrations? Because, strictly speaking, according to the law, we should count the number of penetrations. If you have a gang rape, and four men rape two ladies for the whole weekend, they lock them up somewhere, and repeatedly they rape them, each penetration should actually be a rape and should count one statistic. But you may find, there is just no way, with no system, that you will ever control 100% how many rapes are actually registered. Is it now penetrations, like in gang rape, which is luckily not the main issue. I mean, we don't have so many gang rapes in South Africa, but we still have them. Is it victims, the two ladies, that's two, or is it the count of the four perpetrators of that specific crime?
it can make a big difference. It can make quite a big difference to our statistics. Now here, in this cases that we that was given by the Brigadier, which came from the crime administration system, my office applied it to the Brigadier. In this cases we have a mixture. You may have cases there which are singular cases, but you will have cases there like the Ermelo case, which I believe is one case, where the victims were killed. Because this is actually crimes, this one, I think. And when that one we will still have to sort out 100%. But when it comes to human trafficking, and we hit one of these clubs tonight, and we find seven ladies there who were there against their will, I think we'll have to register one docket, but we'll put in seven counts of human trafficking, and maybe we'll add a count for the manager who we find on the premises, and maybe three or four counts for the clients that we find there.
I didn't know the extent of your detailed input. Maybe I should have warned some sensitive listeners and viewers of some of the stuff you'll be talking about, and some be accompanied by parental guidance. That is on a light note. Questions to the input, honorable members, honorable Jeffrey, honorable Schaefer.
Yeah, I don't know, are we still going to do we still have to fit in social development?
Yes.
Okay, because then we shouldn't be too long, but maybe in preempting that, I mean, they've given us figures, they're going to present them. But that is there any linkage between yourselves, I mean this would be then to the Hawks, and say social development in terms of, so this is statistics of people who've gone to shelters, they've got 73, but I think it actually should be 77 because of the four children, but they've got 73, 77 people, 52 were foreigners. Now, do the Hawks know anything about that? Is there any linkage? Or do they do their own thing? And then you do your thing if you get to hear about it. Okay.
Ms. Schaefer, a second.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The point really is, it's obviously complicated, we understand that, but the point what we want to know is we want to know what we are comparing from year to year, and we want the same things to be compared from one year to another. And surely you can liaise with the various departments and come up with a mechanism whereby you say, we will record rapes by means of penetrations or whatever, but so that there can be consistency between what we're measuring. That's all we're wanting to know.
Okay, thanks. Just to respond to the question from the Honourable Mr. Jeffries, I think relating to the victims that are provided there, I think as a working arrangement, because we have in each of the provinces, with each of the units, the coordinators know that what facilities we can use if we're dealing with victims. So they either can use, social development, so naturally the cases that are generated by the Hawks and the police will be reflected there. As well as in other instances, we would get the victims where they basically wanting to leave the country ASAP. Then we would normally contact the IOM, and they are also of assistance where there is some other shelters that are run by NGOs or other entities that we could utilize. But as a working arrangement, our people who are working with human trafficking cases know that we have access to the Department of Social Development in terms of victims.
Not really. Look, let's take Western Cape. They say there are in people victims accommodated in shelters, centres, from May 2010 to October 2010. May to October, 6 months, and I think it is. There are 21 people in those shelters. Now, is anyone from your side going to social development to say, are you getting these? We've asked for these statistics, we've got them. Do you get these statistics?
Okay.
And if you get those statistics, what do you do with them? Do you then go to social development to say, look, tell us about these people. Are there charges that we should be investigating? Because the problem I've got, I mean, it's maybe an unfair observation, is that we don't seem to be really winning. You know, in the cases where people do get prosecuted, then they walk out with suspended sentences, which, as you know from abalone poaching, you know, if your benefits are so great and your penalties are so so small, well, hey, carry on poaching abalone because it will easily pay for the fine you get. And it seems a bit like that with trafficking, that we're not actually getting anywhere from a law enforcement point of view, which is worrying. So maybe just those two issues. One, the interaction with social development. You get the statistics on a regular basis. If you don't, why not? If you do, you go to them and then try and see whether there are any cases that you can investigate.
Well, thanks, thanks, Honourable Mr. Effie. If I understood your first question now correctly, basically, we would know there is a service available by social development. We would refer. But as far as I know, we're not asking for any steps. So to answer your question very directly.
Then shouldn't you, don't you think, if these are police-generated fines, if that's whatever it's called now, that this would then help you, knowing that look, there's a potential for crimes being committed here.
Yes. No, I think the issue you are raising, I acknowledge what you are raising. I think it's an important consideration that we would have to take into the future. If we really want to try and call it harvest, human trafficking cases, because the victims can be a key. But I think, sir, if you can understand the limitations we have up until now. Up until now, there has not been that proviso which is coming in the new package or in the new film show. So at the moment, you're basically dealing with a situation where you don't always have all the resources at your disposal. And you've got a victim who wants to go home. And that, I don't think even the new law is necessarily going to change, unless they're going to see, but Thailand is not so nice. South Africa is nice. If I can secure my state through that, those are some of the issues that I have warned against, and we'll have to be on guard on that, because we may find ourselves being abused. But I think we in the front line dealing with this would want, ideally and in practice, to be able to see that once we start dealing with this stuff in the near future, or in the from now onwards, that these are the kind of considerations that we would have to make as part of the package in which we would tackle the human trafficking cases.
Okay, maybe last comment to the bigger people. We've had the it's been Major General Geldenhuys. I mean, I see that their assumptions, by the way, of number of cases is 60 for the first year. So they've got and those assumptions of how many cases are important in terms of funding. But I don't know whether the Hawks have taken the bill, have looked at it, and have made any suggestions, because, as you say, you're the coal face. So, this bill is for everybody, but parts of this bill are for you in terms of your implementation and your ability to combat trafficking. So I don't know if you've gone through, looked at the bill, and seen areas which you think could be improved. It's the same point that was raised with the NPA. But have you, as the Hawks, gone through it? And if not, shouldn't you do that and then do a submission to us around some of the provisions relating to policing?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think the point being raised is whether we have had sight and whether we have been part of this thing. I think with the intersectoral task team, we have from the Hawks, our national coordinator is a dedicated person on the task team. And in terms of the bill, certainly the bill has been in sight with both myself as well as the persons who are working with the staff. So we have commented, our legal services has commented, and so there has been those things already done.
This brings us to the end of your submission by the Hawks. Thank you very much, Brigadier.
All right. Thanks.
Was it a robust questioning?
I think maybe I move from a victim to a good client, you know.
Okay,
thank you. Can I just, it's a pity that they're not here when Ms. Sonnenberg was here. I remember she gave glowing reports on the work of the Hawks on the coalface, and just how they were commended, and law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pity that they didn't hear those good commendations to the Hawks.
Yeah.
It's not often that they are commended for the good work that they're doing.
Thanks a lot.
right, social development.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members and Colleagues. I'm Jeanne Groeneval from the Department of Social Development, National in Pretoria. Yesterday, Ms. Connie Kumalu presented this document. I just need a little bit of assistance, maybe there. With it? How do you... Thank you very much. Thanks for your assistance. We will get it. With regard to the first table, where's it now? Okay, let me explain. With regard to the first table, that reflects information from January to April 2010. We work with our provincial, non-provincial counterparts. And we just asked them, with how many victims of alleged victims of human trafficking that they work was reported to them during that time frame. And they reported 98, with Mpumalanga as the highest, with following by Northwest and Gauteng after that, and then the Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal were free. The other table that we will give to you, Priti, please help the other table that we put there. Just close here. Thank you. I will discuss the other table. I've handed out hard copies to some of the colleagues. We only had 15. Just close there. Close there. It was on the desktop this morning. Sorry for that. Desktop. It was lying there. Did somebody remove it? Okay, here's another one for you to follow as the Majukwini. With great apologies, we ciphered here, but now it's gone. There it is. That is that. Wonderful. The difference now between the previous table and this existing one, we develop an information management tool based on the requirements of the bill during April, and we trained our 13 shelter staff members how to complete it as a testing phase till the end of August. What I reported here... a little bit difficult, this different computers technology. Okay, I'm going to talk out of this hard copy. Is that the table 2 reflects now that 73 alleged victims of human trafficking were accommodated in our centers and our shelters. Just for clarification, the shelters are run by non-governmental organizations and the centers are run by government. So we do have 3 government centers, the one in Limpopo, the one in the Eastern Cape, Uitenhout, and the other one is in Upington, those 3. So 7 provinces reflected, within 7 provinces, with the exception from Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Free State provinces from May 2010 to October 2010. 4 children were accommodated in Northwest Province. That was the only place of safety for children as well as on the premises of the shelter. But in the meantime, during this period, they built a separate building and catered for the children for temporary safe care. So 21 alleged victims were inter-country trafficking and 52 were foreigners from Thailand, 22, Malawi 8, Lesotho 7, China 5, Buenos Aires 4, Mozambique 2, Congo 1, Zambia 1, Swaziland 1, and Bangkok 1.
what is it? Swaziland.
No, just well, it's just a small point of Bangkok. Bangkok is the capital of Thailand, so surely the Bangkok figure and the Thailand figure should be added together.
Thank you very much for that. Chairperson, this is the statement of from social development at this point in time. So there is now this little cooperation between social development and SAPS. The only province that worked very close is the Eastern Cape. Of course, those three alleged victims are in those centres for very long, too long actually, close to a year, because they are witnesses. Yeah, so a trial is going on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I understand, you know, these computers were not manufactured during our times. You would laugh when I work on a computer. I will sit in the dining room, and then when I get stuck, I shout on my kids to come and help. They say, come here. And then when they come, I say, don't touch anything. Tell me what where to touch, so that I must know next time when I get stuck, where to start. Gradually, I mastered it. I'm going to take questions, Honorable Jeffrey.
So again, I think there's, looking at the figures from yesterday and today, I think it's apples and pears. I mean, I know yesterday, as has been said, was alleged victims of trafficking dealt with in the provinces, and this is the people, these figures that we've just been given should be more accurate because they're people accommodated.
Mm.
But just the disparities, you know, yesterday Gauteng 14, it's now Gauteng 41. Yesterday in Mpumalanga 40, it's now zero. So I think it was really apples and pears. So I think, I don't know if there's much use in looking at yesterday's statistics from social development. But as far as the statistics we've got now, they've come from shelters because the way the bill is structured, as you know, is that the service providers get accredited. The victims go off to the service providers and the accredited service providers or accredited organizations, and then they get certified as victims. I think there are problems with the whole thing in terms of open to abuse. But on what basis were people regarded as alleged victims of human trafficking? So I don't know if you asked the shelters, give us your details. Did you provide them any guidelines of what is a trafficked, alleged victim of human trafficking? And then I think the other point I'd be interested in is how the resources that these people are these victims are costing. Do you know any figures like how long they stay in the shelters, what they're entitled to when they get there? Or not what they're entitled to, what they're given when they get there, and for how long they're given it for. Do you have any of those details? Because that's going to really help us with the costing of the bills. And then I think you heard my question to the police. Surely, if there's this intersectoral approach, this information should be being shared with the police so that they can. Obviously, one doesn't. There is the whole aspect which Ms. Schaefer raised of consent. And the consent of the victim for a police investigation, and we need to look at whether that is appropriate. And you don't want to stop people going to the shelters, victims going to the shelters, if they're going to get harassed by the police wanting statements from them. But at the same time, here is potentially here are good leads as to trafficking cases. But so my question is, interaction, shouldn't there be more interaction between yourselves and the police on this information?
Thank you very much. With regard to question one, what happened, what basis regarded the shelters to be perceived victims as victims of human trafficking? We identified those 13 shelters, and we asked them to nominate two staff members, the manager included, and we gave them orientation followed by an in-depth week training on what is human trafficking as it is perceived today. Our definition is in our assessment tool is the recruitment phase. What happened during that recruitment phase? What routes were we taking with regard to the transportation? Was it by air, sea, or land? And then what happened when they reached their destination with regard to the exploitation phase? So based on those three icons, they can determine if this is a victim of human trafficking. But it don't happen with the first interview. Due to personal circumstances, due to the level of traumatization, number one. Number two, due to fear. And number three, due to the medical situation as well. And language barriers. So it's taking time for them to identify that I was actually a victim of human trafficking. And while I'm saying that, I just want to add something else, is that prior to 2008, actually March 2008, no social worker and no social service provider that I met knows about the phenomenon of human trafficking. So it's still new, although we trained a lot, but it's still new. We still need to engage with that. So there might be more, but I would not be able in a position to establish if this is a victim of human trafficking or just a victim of circumstances. Then with regard to the resources, the costing, and how long, in our government shelters, we requested them to indicate to us a unit cost per day. And they indicated that it cost them 160 rand a day per victim. Compared to civil society organizations, that is plus minus 80 rand a day. And then I would like to indicate to the honorable members that government is only contributed less than 48 rand a day, depending on certain provinces. Like, for instance, KwaZulu-Natal has contributed 48 rand per day. Gauteng is 32 rand 50 cents a day. And others are worse. That is why we would love to have a legislation and regulations to have a standardized approach with regard to the civil society organizations who contributed towards the work of government. Then how long? That is very interesting due to the fact that we perceive the International Organization for Migration as the expert in a country today. We're still in a learning curve to get there where we can say we're becoming experts. So with regard to the International Organization of Migration is involved, it's very short. And short, in my terms, is 3 to 4 weeks. Then the victim is back from the country of origin. They work directly with the embassies in our country, and they manage to get them out. With regard to long...
Can I quickly just ask, who pays for that return?
They, definitely not government. I don't know, International Organization for Migration, I didn't verify that. If it's the embassies or...
But it's not us.
Yeah. With regard to adults, if there's children, there's another route that we are taking with the International Social Services Desk and the other departments. And then with regard to long term, I indicated that we are very much concerned about those cases that those clients or victims who cooperate to be witnesses. They are staying too long in our shelters. In the Eastern Cape, it's more than a year one. That is a case in Port Elizabeth. And we're concerned about institutionalization. Although there's tremendous behavior challenges as well with regard to victims that were exposed to utilization of substances like drugs. That's a major challenge for social development. Then with regard to the last question, the networking with between SAPS and social development and interaction, I think each department tries utmost best until now to manage this whole implementation requirements for this bill. But that's not enough. We're still working, unfortunately, in certain instances in isolation. We should establish small task teams in each province that can come on a regular basis together and assist each other with specific cases so that we can transfer and learn from each other in the whole processes. Thank you very much.
Just
a question of clarity. You said the government shelters were something about 160 rand a day, but then you said government was only contributing 48 or 32. So what is the 160? I didn't quite understand that.
Okay. We do have government service points, shelters. They call it centers here in South Africa. And then we do have NGOs, civil society organizations, who render services on behalf of government. Annually, they applied for funding from government, from social development, for NGOs to render the services. So they submit a business plan, and according to the business plan, they're getting a certain amount of money for certain icons, activities to execute. And what I explained was KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, give daily per victim 48 rand a day. And that is not enough. You know, the people from Thailand, they want their rice, their special nutrition, and that costs a lot.
So the government centers are getting 160 rand a day from government, but the NGOs are only receiving a lesser amount of that.
Yeah, that's correct.
Then, Honorable Swart,
is there any distinction between alleged victims of trafficking and other women seeking refuge in the shelters, or children who need to be looked after, as far as the money, the subsidy or whatever given. So in your three centres, two of which seem to be in areas where there don't seem to be any victims of trafficking at the moment. Well, in fact, you've got Limpopo nothing, and Mpumalanga nothing, Northern Cape one, and no, it's Eastern Cape, sorry. But anyway, this 160 rand, would that be paid for whoever is in the shelter, the government shelters? And if those would not necessarily be victims of trafficking, it would be abused women needing shelter, basically. And then the amount of money given to the NGOs, would that also be given to anyone in need rather than a victim of trafficking?
Can you take the question from Honorable Swart before you answer?
Does the IOM contribute anything to costs per day or repatriation costs? And the IOM, the name keeps coming up, and maybe we need to invite them at some stage to give us an input. They seem to be the experts on the field as well. So we should consider that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. With regard to our existing services, shelters by non-governmental organizations, shelters were established in South Africa prior to 2000, and they were only 35 at that stage, and they were running just by non-governmental organizations without support of government. After 2004, we developed a shelter strategy, and based on that, provinces established shelters in partnership with civil society organizations, and that calculates to 96 as it is today. Government also counteract for services, but mainly for victims of domestic violence. Mainly for victims of domestic violence. And with the request now of this phenomenon, we requested provincial counterparts to assist us and to engage with their networking shelters. To nominate shelters that are willing to accommodate these victims. And they identify those 13. So with regard to refugee status and so on, there are other kinds of shelters that accommodate those. With regard to the issue of subsidy, I think I missed out on that due to my age now. Sorry. The question of the subsidy.
Can you repeat the question on subsidy?
I'm going to work out, and I wasn't talking about refugees, I was talking about women in need of shelter. So
yeah.
It would be domestic violence, it could be a sex worker who has had enough and has nowhere else to go, wasn't trafficked, but one has had enough and just wants somewhere to stay so she doesn't have to work. Would those people also be, would the people, the NGOs running the shelters, if they take, would those women also be in these 13 shelters that you speak about?
Yeah.
And would they then also be receiving a subsidy for the people?
They will receive subsidy for each victim per night. They submit a claim forms to the provincial VP coordinators, and based on that they're getting a back pain type of thing. The victims that they are catered for is mainly victims of domestic violence in South Africa. The others, they will refer them. If it's a sex worker that is tired of the prison practice, they will refer her then to another type of service. The tendency was now during the World Cup to phone these shelters and indicate we've got 40 sex workers. Can you please accommodate them? And that is now the purpose of these specialized services. It's not for sex workers. It's for victims that's been trafficked. But that is clearly indicated now to all those who render services to them. So the scenario today is that shelters cater for victims of domestic violence and victims of human trafficking. And most of the time it's very difficult. But we want to utilize existing services. IOM is really a wonderful partner in this fight with regard to victims of human trafficking, as we heard since yesterday. They financially contributed with donor funds per month per victim. They engage with a contract with the shelters for a period of 3 months, and then they contributed towards the expenses. With a specific amount, I'm not 100% sure, but it's not less than 700 rand a month, and it's not more than 1,000. Might be in between.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
I learned that IOM is here and present. Maybe we can give them an opportunity to come and say something. IOM?
She's just left. Okay. Chair, I mean, maybe they should come at another time, and also it would be, I think, to be fair to them to give them time to prepare.
Yes. Right. It seems we have come to an end of the presentations today. I would like to take this time, this opportunity to thank every one of you. Those who feel that they have been under cross-examination, I want to say it was just the way how we get information from stakeholders, from departments, to enable us to be in a better way before we pass some of these things. Honorable Jeffrey, seems you want to say something? Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, people. We are here.
Thank you.